Okay, folks, let's everyone take their seats so we can begin today's continuation of our hearing from December 2nd, 1st and 2nd. Ms. Hewitt, would you like to take roll call, please?
Thank you. Daniel Press.
Present.
Russell Jeffries.
Present.
Jeffrey Young.
Present.
Gary Shellcross.
Here.
John Hayashi.
Present.
Les Bowker.
Present.
Monica Hunter.
Okay. Mr. Thomas, would you like to do introductions for us?
Okay, good morning. My name is Michael Thomas. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer. To the left of Mr. Young, we have Cheryl Schaffner, the board's counsel on this case. At the prosecution table, on my left, is Harvey Packard, our division chief, Sorrel Marks, project manager, Lori Oaken, prosecution staff attorney, Roger Briggs, the executive officer, Matt Thompson, also project manager with the board, and on my right, we have Carol Hewitt, who's the assistant, executive assistant, and in the back of the room, we have Burton Chadwick, who has the cards, I believe. Well, there won't be any speaking on this item, will there? So he does not have cards. And at the prosecution table, we have Mr. McClendon, Mr. Seitz, and I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Stephen Austin, I'm special counsel as retained November 17th
to represent
the district.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And perhaps we need a microphone for you, Mr. Onstad, or are you going to be sharing that with Mr. Seitz? Maybe you put that in between the two of you. Great. Okay. And we have a court reporter here today, the gentleman down at the end of the table next to Carol Hewitt.
Did that appearance make the record? You didn't have a microphone. Did the court reporter catch that?
I did, but he can reiterate just to be safe.
Go ahead.
Stephen Onstad. I'm with Burke Williams and Sorensen, special counsel to the Los Osos Community Service District.
Thank you. Is Mr. Grimm going to be here today?
Unfortunately, the answer to that is no. He will not be here.
Okay. All right. Why don't we then have Mr. Bowker, Dr. Bowker, you're up here with us, but why don't you go ahead and tell the audience why you are going to step
down.
I've
been advised on legal counsel, as in the past, to recuse myself of this issue. Thank you.
Okay. And Monica Hunter is here, and Dr. Hunter, do you want to put on the record again why you are not participating in this?
Yes, good morning. I am a resident of Los Osos, so I'm also going to recuse myself from this proceeding.
Okay, thank you. All right. Well, we're going to continue with where we left off on December 2nd, and I'm just briefly looking at some notes for me to read that Cheryl Schaffner put together. This is the first chance I've had to really take a look at them. Introductory comments by the chair. I'll go ahead. I'll proceed. Okay, folks. This is the time and place for the continuation of a hearing by the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board for consideration of a proposed administrative civil liability for the Los Osos Community Services District. This matter was originally noticed for, and the first 2 days of hearing were held on December 1st and 2nd, 2005. As announced at that hearing and as subsequently noticed, this is the date and place for the continuation and conclusion of that hearing. This matter has been duly noticed, and two parties have been designated for this proceeding, the Los Osos Community Services District and the Regional Water Quality Control Board prosecution staff. As noted previously, since this is a prosecutorial matter, staff functions have been separated into two teams, the prosecution team and the board advisory team. This is done to ensure that the board has neutral advisors who have not been personally involved in the prosecution of the proposed enforcement actions. The prosecution team, consisting of Roger Briggs, Harvey Packard, Gerhard Huebner, Sorrel Marks, Matt Thompson, and Counsel Lori Okun, have been treated like any other party before the Water Board throughout this proceeding and have not had ex parte contacts with the board or advisory team. The advisory team consists of Michael Thompson, to my immediate right, and legal counsel Cheryl Schaffner, to my immediate left, who came down from her Santa Rosa office today to serve in this capacity.
That's Michael Thomas, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
You're right.
Not Matt Thompson. That's like me getting Bruce Daniels and Daniel Press confused all the time. Okay, I would like to remind everyone that everyone that is going to testify at the last stage of this hearing, that they are still under oath and sworn under penalty of perjury to tell the truth in this matter. Are there any witnesses present to give testimony today that were not at the December 1st or 2nd hearing or did not take the oath at that time? Okay, seeing no hands, I'm going to assume that everyone who is going to testify today has taken the oath. Okay, initially we need to deal with some... Mr. Onstad, you were here, I think, for day one, right, December 1st?
Correct. I was in the audience.
Right, and you took the oath at that time?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. We have a few procedural issues concerning a variety of motions, objections, and document issues, and this is probably going to take us a little bit of time to get through before we can get into new evidence that I had ordered be produced prior to this hearing. There's an outstanding subpoena issued to the Community Services District, and the Community Services District has a motion to quash before this panel, which is first on the list to address. Ms. Schaffner, do you want to describe what this item is about?
Certainly. Let me pull up a copy of the subpoena.
Folks, if you can't hear us, please let us know so that we can speak louder.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Can you hear me okay now? Okay, very good. Just got to use the microphone. This subject arises from the conclusion of the last day of hearing on December 2nd, at which the chair ruled that no further new evidence would be taken, any evidence that had not been submitted by the prior deadline or introduced at the hearing and accepted was not going to be admitted. The chair later modified that ruling, as is at his discretion, to ask for any new evidence that concerns, addresses, relates to the CSD's ongoing activities as they may affect compliance with the time schedule order or unlawful discharges in violation of the prohibition. Those would include actions that would help or hinder or delay or accelerate any ongoing compliance. This is a matter of routine consideration in enforcement actions. The board frequently considers ongoing compliance activities, whether it be a renewed effort to come into compliance by a discharger who has an enforcement action pending, or whether it is ongoing violations, either of which is fairly considered by the board as a equitable consideration in determining how much of enforcement action is necessary and appropriate to motivate compliance and to give credit where extra effort is being made to come into compliance. So it's not unique to this situation, and the chair asked that the parties, through, I believe, three different communications, December 4th, 6th, and 16th, I believe, that asked the parties to submit any available information that would affect this subject concerning ongoing compliance.
Let me just a brief, I want to just address that, you know, specifically, and I didn't realize you had something laid out here, Cheryl, for me to describe this issue. After the conclusion of the December 2nd hearing, and on my drive back home, of course, my mind was filled with what had happened December 1st and 2nd, as I'm sure everyone's was who was involved with this. And I began to realize that anything that might happen after December 2nd that either brought the district into compliance or took them further away from compliance, I felt was relevant and probative and important for this proceeding. And based on that conclusion that I drew, I then proceeded to talk with Cheryl and Michael, and we decided to issue a series of emails that turned out to be three of them. But the purpose was to allow for a very narrow category of additional evidence to come in, solely dealing with compliance issues. And so although I had ruled at the conclusion of December 2nd that there would be no further testimony and evidence, I did make that ruling. As the hearing officer, I do have the ability and the authority to modify any orders that I do issue. That order was issued by myself, and it's my own modification of that for a very narrow category of documents to come in. And so that's why you have the series of emails that went out and the request for those documents. So I think, Mr. Onstott, after I received and reviewed your December, I think, 16th letter, and I realized that the district really was not at least willing to provide any additional information, additional testimony. It was very clear to me that you were basing that in part on my December 2nd ruling, and apparently were overlooking the fact that I was modifying my own order, but were still not going to provide any additional information, that I felt it important to issue a subpoena to have these documents brought forth. I believe that in one of those emails that we had requested at least some of those documents, maybe the board resolutions or board minutes, I'm not quite sure, but I felt that we had provided the district with at least some early on heads up that we were looking for some of these documents. And part of the reason for that, and I want you to understand this, is that the district's theory so far to the board has been you can't do anything to the district unless it takes some official action. And Mr. Seitz was very clear, and Mr. McClendon, going through what those were, you know, resolutions and things of that nature, official acts. And so I began to also contemplate the significance of that and realize that, you know, the district can also express its policy through its administrative officers and to give them direction like Mr. Bleski. And I wanted to make sure that the board and the record had all documents that might help us even look at what administrative functions the board was giving to staff to carry out its policies. And that was really the purpose and the intent behind that, is to flush that out. Anyway, I asked Mr. Thomas and Ms. Schaffner to prepare the subpoena and to get it served. I did look at your motion to quash. I've read through it. I did look at the code sections that you cited. I do want to go over them with you and take each of the objections that you raised one by one so we can flush this out. Maybe get this behind us. Why don't we start Mr. Onstott, with the argument that you put forth on page 3 of your motion. The subpoena is not timely. And my question to you is, it's my understanding that the two sections that you cite in the Code of Civil Procedure, 1987 and section 2020.410, do not deal with a party who has been served a subpoena.
That is correct. The normal course of events in litigation is that subpoenas are served on non-parties, not parties to the action themselves. Usually that's given by notice. The notice provisions for documents are 20 days. That's why, and there's another notice provision for 15 days. That's why we think that 3 business days is unreasonable. It's our view that somebody recognized that they missed the notice period of 15 or 20 days, and the only way that they can request documents 3 business days before production today would be to issue a subpoena, which in our view is improper upon a party.
Actually, but if I could clear.
You are correct that the statute pertaining to subpoenas to produce documents does say a reasonable period of time.
Right.
It is not a set amount of days.
Okay.
But given the holidays and 3 business days, when other places in the statutes mentioned 15 or 20 days, we think that 3 is unreasonable. In fact, so unreasonable, those documents are not here today. There's just not time to pull them out.
Okay, well, 1987 does not apply to the subpoena. Is that that's your understanding, correct? Okay. And 2020.410 does not apply to a subpoena served on a party?
Correct.
Okay.
Actually, I think probably the finer points put on 1987, it is not required to use a subpoena to obtain this information, that a notice would be sufficient. However, the choice of use of 1987 is not inappropriate in this setting. It was the chair and board counsel chose the more formal path to ensure that the district was given all the process it could receive at this time, and that the reasonable time standard does come out of 1987 as well. And the question of whether the time provided is a reasonable period of time is a factual one for the board to determine whether the chair exercised his discretion appropriately in this setting. And the service was made on the 29th. And the question is, was the period of time between the 29th and today sufficient time to produce resolutions adopted by the board, minutes adopted by the board, draft resolutions, and draft minutes held by the board under consideration, and the minutes and notes taken by the board's secretary and the board's general manager at board meetings between the specific period set out in the subpoena, which was the end of September through this date, and or through the date of service of the subpoena, as I recall. Let's see, 9/27 through 12/29/2005. So we're talking about 3 months of very specific documents in the custody of the CSD, which shouldn't be that difficult to locate in their files. The question is, and noting, and the other relevant fact would be, as Mr. Young has noted, the CSD was notified on December 4th, December 6th, and December 16th that the chairman was wanting all documents relating to ongoing actions of the CSD. So there was a general notice that these files could be specifically of interest to the board. They're not extensive. They're very specific. And they should be right at the fingertips of the board. The question for the board of the CSD, for the question for the board to consider is that a reasonable period of time on this particular objection? Was that a reasonable period of time for the CSD to locate and provide those documents?
Well, let me ask you a few questions. You would agree that, assuming we even look at 1987 as a corollary and for guidance on what might be reasonable time frame, you agree that traveling to the place of attendance for the production, we can disregard that. You were going to be coming here anyway.
Correct.
And that's out. Okay. Correct. So really the only question for us to resolve is what would have been a reasonable time for your staff to prepare the documents? And let me ask you that. How many resolutions were passed during that three-month time period? Well, how many pages are we talking about?
Well, I don't know that, but it goes beyond resolutions, which I believe are also posted. It goes for drafts and it goes for notes. Notes that go back 3 months. Some people don't keep notes. Some people don't keep drafts of resolutions that they put together. And to dig on either computer files or call off deleted items or render that search over a holiday period in the course of three business days, we think is unreasonable. With regards to resolutions, there's probably a couple of them. I don't know off the top of my head. But the scope of the subpoena is broader than that.
Okay, let's address this. Are you the attorney that has been present during the CSD board deliberations?
Some of them.
During this time period?
Yes.
Okay. Who else? Has Mr. McClendon? Okay. Mr. McClendon, have you been at all of the CSD closed sessions?
No, not all of them.
Okay. Has there always been a lawyer present during the closed sessions?
Well, I'm a little confused here. Are we talking about closed sessions?
Closed sessions during which time any documents would have been produced that are responsive to the subpoena. In other words, closed sessions where resolutions and minutes were discussed, either proposed.
Those aren't items we're discussing in closed session.
Okay, were they done in open session?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know how many pages of documents the district has that would be responsive to the subpoena?
To my best knowledge, parsing out what Mr. Onstott has talked about with drafts and preliminaries and notes and talking about just the resolutions themselves, it's my understanding that we have two resolutions, one of which has an attachment to it with a deal point memo going back to the negotiated deal with our assemblyman Blakesley, and I believe those are part of this record. You already have those.
Okay. How many times has the board met in closed session since October 1st or 2nd, whenever the beginning of the time frame?
I've lost count.
Okay.
I'm going to guess it's over 20.
Okay. Is someone taking notes during closed session?
There may be some notes that are taken, but those would be attorney-client confidence.
Is any member of staff taking notes other than attorneys?
No, not to my knowledge.
So the attorney is essentially the scribe for whatever goes on in closed session?
Correct.
Okay. Are there any draft resolutions that have been produced during the time period mentioned in the subpoena that exist?
There are drafts that I have,
and I don't mean drafts to the two resolutions.
Oh, okay. Then
I mean other resolutions that are in draft mode, but have not been finalized.
I'm not that I am aware of. But in terms of draft resolutions, it's usually myself. I'll take the first cut at it, and I'm typically overwriting those with as comments and changes come in. So I don't know that I would actually be able to tell you I've got draft version 1, draft version 2, draft version 3. I've got a final, which is the one ultimately adopted. And now on the second resolution, there were some interlineations on actually at the open session of that resolution. That's my recollection. I suppose that would require going to the outfit that does the taping of that, and you could probably pull off of the recording of that what those specific edits were right there in open session.
All right, how about minutes? Do you have minutes of all of your meetings?
Minutes, I would not be able to talk on those. I believe we're...
Well, who is responsible for generating minutes?
It's staff.
Who specifically? Mr. Pulaski?
Karen Vega.
Okay. All right. And does she attend the closed sessions also?
No.
Okay. Who takes minutes of closed sessions?
We don't have closed session minutes.
Is Mr. Bleski, he participates in closed sessions, doesn't he?
Yes, we okay. Generally have the general manager.
Okay, Mr. Bleski, do you take notes during closed session?
I take some notes.
Okay.
There are more diary entries.
Mr. McClendon, I'm not sure that we have the two resolutions.
Are you talking about the resolutions adopted since September 27th?
Yes.
And you say we have those resolutions in the record?
I believe we, it's my understanding.
Are those the ones concerning your negotiations with the state board?
Correct.
There's been no other resolutions adopted since that date in this three-month period?
Have there been?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I would just, in order to preserve the record, I would suggest that the people from the audience are going to be testifying to responses to your questions, that they do so with a microphone so that we...
Yes, thank you. Please, could you repeat that into the microphone, what you just said?
Could you come to the podium and repeat?
Very good.
We have some resolutions. One resolution in particular that had to do with the project itself was a commitment to the project. We also have other, I believe we have some other resolutions related to other dealings with our other CSD functions.
And have you adopted minutes in that three-month period?
Yes, we have. And okay. We do not have complete minutes adopted right now. Due to some of the administrative changes we would like to see in our form and format of minutes.
How are these documents kept in the regular course of business?
With the resolutions, we have a resolution file. With the minutes, we have a minutes file. Fairly straightforward.
So they're just a file to be picked up?
Yes.
Okay.
And who is your custodian of records?
That is a little unclear. I'd have to refer to counsel on that because of the relationship I have as interim general manager as a consultant, and also we still have our general manager still on the payroll.
But at this time, any official act by the CSD that is taken at a meeting is going to be presented to the board of directors by you as the chief executive officer, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess
he's gone.
I just narrow it down. They clearly have adopted minutes and solutions. Now where they are.
and a draft resolutions in this mail.
How much time would it take, Mr. Bleski, to retrieve those two files and your notes?
Not from closed session, but from open session. Notes that you would have taken at the open session.
My notes? I take, those are my diary entries. Those are never, ever in the project files or the official files. Those are my personal records.
Which you take down as part of your duties in performing your duties for this district, correct? They're not like about doctor's appointments or whatever. They're notes of the meeting. That's what we're talking about.
They're okay. Personal diaries.
About,
not a part of the official record.
They're about the meeting.
They're my personal diaries. I mean, I'm going to leave it at that because they do contain personal notes. They contain addresses. This is the stuff that I do to my personal reminders. If I make notes that are project specific, they go in the project file.
Would you put in these notes any directives that you were given by the board? Anything for you to follow up on and carry out in terms of board policy?
I would make notations that are to refresh my memory.
Okay, and what about draft minutes and resolutions that are pending but not yet adopted? When you those are prepared for the board meeting, but say the board hasn't gotten to them, they're not agendized, they either didn't adopt them, discussed them, and sent them back for some amendments, whatever. They're not adopted, but they're draft. Would those be, I would assume they would go through you, and therefore they would be presented by your staff to you to present to the board?
When we're routing what we would consider our latest version, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So do you have currently any draft resolutions or minutes that the board has not adopted yet?
The only thing that I have right now on my desk, actually I'll have them Friday, will be for stuff after December 29th for our January 12th meeting.
Okay.
All other version control being a real issue, usually what I do is I fold the draft after I've made the annotations, confirm that the annotations were made to the final version or the current draft, and then I destroy all drafts.
So are you, you're saying that your diary, as you call it, of the meeting, your notes about the meeting, I'd like to just get real clear. Are you saying those are privileged in some way?
That would take a legal opinion.
It would. Thank you.
As was mentioned earlier, Mr. McClendon either took the first cut or reviewed those drafts, that's attorney work product, or to the other extent, and I think more importantly, draft resolutions are completely irrelevant because they do not reflect what the CSD has done, what action they did or did not take as a body. Even resolutions that are proposed and not adopted are irrelevant. So if, in part, if the chair is going to deny the motion to quash, I want to make it very clear that the chair is holding that unofficial actions or actions that do not represent the CSD are relevant in an enforcement proceeding against the CSD. I'd like that explicitly held, Mr. Chair, if that is your ruling.
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson.
I haven't finished going through your motion.
Right.
At this point, but Mr. Onstott, it appears to me, and we were given a recent San Luis Obispo Tribune article that had comments made by CSD staff that the district was going to sell or trade the Tri-W site and the Andre site, or pardon me, and the Broderson site for another site. And my concern is that things are going on with the district where there's direction being given, policy being formulated, that are not going to appear in resolutions or drafts and minutes. And I think that that is very relevant information to compliance or noncompliance. And it's to that body of information that I'm trying to get a handle on.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, in response to that, two things, and I'll address it more in closing, with regards to the chair's prior direction that newspaper articles are hearsay and will not be admitted. And I'll get to that more, like I said, later in closing. Secondly, real property negotiations by public entities are privileged. So we would again assert the real property exception. Those could be discussed in closed sessions. If it relates to litigation, those were properly agendized and can also be subject to privilege and discussed in closed session. The same thing holds true with any communications regarding counsel between either the district staff or its board members regarding that as well.
What privilege are you citing for discussions about real property being protected? I don't know what you're talking about.
Real property negotiations can be held in closed session and not subject to discovery in enforcement proceedings.
Most likely that privilege was waived anyway once the CSD directors discussed it publicly with the newspaper. I mean, I can get into eliciting that testimony by examination and get that out, but I would say that privilege, if it exists, was waived.
Well, we would take the position, number one, it assumes facts not in evidence that there was a sale considered, and number two, we would take exception to the fact that one director or one staff member can waive a privilege held by an entire agency.
And that is something that I'm sure we can all go have some lengthy debate about, and I'm not sure that it truly bears on the outcome of this motion to quash at the moment. But I would also like to circle back around to your comment, Mr. Onslaught, about hearsay evidence. And just to refresh the memory of all those present, the government code provides under Section 11513 that the hearing need not be conducted according to technical rules relating to evidence or witnesses, and any evidence, relevant evidence, shall be admitted if it is the sort of evidence on which reasonable persons are accustomed to rely. If there's hearsay evidence introduced, it can be admitted over objection if it fits any of the exceptions, or it can be used to supplement or explain other evidence. And the chair has indicated a desire to stay away from newspaper articles just because they tend to be a lot of cobbled together information that's difficult to validate and verify. However, it can be used as a basis for questioning, and it can be used to corroborate other evidence, and it can be used if it meets other hearsay exception rules, such as statements of party against interest, such as evidence that is otherwise supported by corroborating evidence. And under those, under that rubric, the chair, I believe, has a reasonable basis for inquiring into the director's statement to the newspaper, considering the importance of the concept of selling the property, which is the only path to compliance at this point. But let's go back to what you do have. What you have stated you actually have in the possession of the CSD that you know of, that you could go lay your hands on right now, and that are all minutes and resolutions that the general manager just noted are in two files. Those are the documents that have been adopted, approved by CSD vote for the period of 9/27 through 12/29. Those sound clean and easy to go lay your hands on. They're two files. The question of draft minutes and resolutions that are pending but not yet adopted, they, you have argued, are privileged because your counsel has made notes on them. However, the counsel notes could be redacted if need be to protect the privilege. I'm sure it sounds like some of those exist and could be located. The notes taken by Mr. Bleski at the CSD board meetings that were not in closed session I don't see a privilege that would apply, and that was my original question to you, Mr. Onstott. Do you believe a privilege applies to any of the notes taken by Mr. Bleski at the open sessions?
No, other than a relevance objection.
Okay,
if there's
thank
an
you.
Offer of proof, if you know specifically that there are notes there that are germane to this and can either quote them or give us a date and time in his calendar, then yes.
Well, we're not going to know that. And, of course, the purpose for the subpoena, because we don't have possession of the documents, we don't know what's in them, is to use it as a discovery tool. And I think you know the standard in discovery is to get your hands on any evidence that may become admissible at trial or hearing. And so there may be things that are outside that scope but may lead to admissible evidence. And that is the purpose for the subpoena and the request for those categories. So I don't know. There may be 80% of it. It may be really irrelevant to what we're doing, and there may be some nuggets of information that may be probative one way or the other. Till we see it, we don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let me just take a throw at this. What I understand, I see, as I see it, you're trying to get probative information on what the district is doing or not doing, in order to help you make your decision here. And it seems to me that what's happened here is perhaps we've gotten a little turned around a bit and spun around with this idea of draft documents and things of that sort, not understanding. What I was handed a list here of board accomplishments that were actually done, and not by necessarily in every case by a resolution or an ordinance, but simply by simple motion. They also gave me a couple of notes here on resolutions that I forgot about, one regarding the district attorney, one regarding the U.S. Inspector General. What it seems to me would be the probative evidence that you're looking for would be, and I'll just throw this out, is all of the agendas for all of our meetings with the agenda staff packets on those, which would have the staff reports on each agenda item, and that would show you what this district has done since October 1 with all of these meetings, with all of the actions that they've considered. It would also show you actions where, for example, maybe they've been on the agenda, they've been pushed aside, but they're in the pipeline, so to speak, so you can have that over the horizon look at where we're going. Perhaps that was the confusion that we had here, and what would be perhaps be the most probative evidence would be, and it's a, I'm sure it's a lot of information, but it would be all of the agendas and all of the agenda packets.
Mr. Shallcross.
Would those agendas and packets include what action the board took?
That would be the minutes.
Okay. That's why.
So that would close the loop. In other words, minutes without all of that backup are really kind of meaningless. You could look at the minutes and say, well, they hired so-and-so to do such-and-such study, but without the agenda pack, without the staff report on what's that study about, you really don't have any information there other than what was the final action, but you have no context on that.
Well, I think that would be helpful. I also, though, want to see Mr. Bleski's notes. And the purpose for that is I want to see what direction has been given to Mr. Bleski during this period of time where he is, in fact, carrying out administrative functions and board policy, which may not be reflected in the minutes themselves or the resolutions. So,
I guess, and one final factual point before
okay.
you draw this to closure on this issue of what documents we're asking for, where are they, what's reasonable to produce. I would like to refresh the memory of the chair, because he alluded to it earlier, and for the benefit of the rest of the board. On December 6th, almost a month ago, on behalf of the chair, Michael Thomas sent a note to all the parties saying that the chairman wanted all available evidence, new information, and not previously submitted materials, including CSD board minutes and resolutions regarding the time period in question that could affect the ability of CSD to comply with the TSO. So it's been almost a month, not 3 days, that the CSD has had to locate these documents. And the response to that request came, there were two responses actually, that didn't seem to be aware of one another. One of them was from Mr. Onstott, and in that response, Mr. Onstott affirmatively refused, said the CSD will not produce the documents requested. And that led to another request on the 16th and led to ultimately led to the subpoena, just to make this all
right,
tidy on the record for clarity's sake. But to wrap up this first segment of it.
Can you just wrap up the categories, at least that based on our examination, we know that we can at least specify and I want to finish going through his points here.
Will do. The three categories of documents requested were the draft minutes and resolutions pending but not yet approved. Those have been discussed as being available but perhaps containing edits by counsel that may be privileged. So those sounds like they're identifiable and locatable. The second subject category was all minutes and resolutions approved by the CSD board for the period specified. The general managers testified those are clearly identifiable, easily locatable in two files. And the third category, notes taken of the meetings by Mr. Bleski. And Mr. Onstott has admitted that those are not privileged. He questions their relevance. The chairman believes that they contain relevant and potentially admissible evidence, and that is the universe of documents.
Well, relevancy is not a standard for discovery anyway.
No. And
okay. It is upon
they're likely to lead
submission to for documents and testimony at trial, but not as a discovery bar.
And, however, the subject of the universe of documents, notes taken at board meetings for this specified period, are likely to lead to admissible evidence. I don't think that that is questionable.
Okay, let's go through the rest of the argument here. The subpoena violates the chair's order declaring evidence closed as of December 2nd, 05. I think I've already commented on that it is myself who amended my own order of December 2nd, and so the subpoena does not violate my modified order. The subpoena was improperly served. Michael Thomas has been segregated from the prosecution staff team. Now, yes, he is a staff member of the Regional Water Quality Control Board. But he, for this proceeding, is not an employee or a party of the prosecution staff team. I think he's perfectly, he's a perfectly legitimate person to serve a subpoena.
Yeah, this is, I think.
Excuse me, I don't want to hear any comments from the public at this point in time. Okay, I just don't like that. I want to be able to listen to what is said by the people up here at the podium, from either people that are in favor of what you may hear or not in favor of what you hear. If you cannot keep your comments to yourself, I will ask you to leave this proceeding. And I'm not going to repeat this.
On the point that the chairman just made about Mr. Thomas not being a party, I think that really is a critical aspect of this proceeding. In order to provide a fair hearing to the CSD, the functions of staff have been separated, and Mr. Thomas is very specifically not a party to this action. Parties have been officially designated by the chairman. Those parties are the prosecution team staff as named and participating, and the CSD. This is a formal process that is created to protect the due fair hearing rights of the CSD, and it has been honored. Mr. Thomas has not participated as a party. Therefore, we believe it was appropriate for him to serve the subpoena.
Now, but as part of that component, there's an argument that the manner in which Mr. Thomas served the subpoena violated something, and I'm not quite sure what. I'd like to give the district an opportunity to tell me. I did read Mr. Bleski's letter that was sent to Mr. Briggs complaining about the manner in which the subpoena was served. But I guess the core question is, Mr. Onstott, what is it about that that makes the service of the subpoena defective?
Nothing.
Okay, thank you.
It was just an informational item, but what the process server did, what Mr. Thomas did, does not have any bearing on the validity of the subpoena.
Okay. And then the last component is the affidavit of Cheryl Schaffner is insufficient. Section 1985 states that an affidavit in support of a subpoena, deuces tecum, specify the exact matters or things desired to be produced, setting forth in full detail the materiality thereof to the issues involved in the case. Here Ms. Schaffner testifies that the requested documents, quote, pertain to ongoing actions of the CSD affecting compliance as equitable matters in considering the proposed ACLA, close quote. Such vague reason is nothing more than a fishing expedition and is far from the full detail required by the statute. In addition, Ms. Schaffner requests draft minutes and resolutions of the district board. However, because the district only acts by a vote of its board, draft minutes and resolutions by definition have no probative value. Thus, they cannot be deemed to pertain to actions of the CSD affecting compliance. Similarly, personal notes taken by Ms. Vega or Mr. Blesky have no probative value on district compliance. The subpoena was directed to the custodian of records for the district, which means that the scope of the subpoena is for district records, not personal notes. Well, I think the categories are, I don't agree with your conclusion. If you read the categories, I think they're fairly specific. We've already gone through the three categories that we have requested. They have time constraints. They're not open-ended. It's about a three-month period. And the types of documents are identified as closely as one can without actually having them in their possession and having not seen them. There's an issue with the reason or cause put into the subpoena underlying the request, and Ms. Schaffner put in here, these documents pertain to the Regional Water Quality Control Board's consideration of actions taken or directions given by the CSD board or staff that could help, hinder, accelerate, or delay the CSD's compliance with orders of the regional board, as provided by Water Code Section 13.327. I think that that states a reasonable justification and rationale for why those categories have been demanded. They pertain to ongoing actions of the CSD affecting compliance as equitable matters in considering a proposed ACL. I think there's enough justification. I think there's enough specificity. I do want the documents produced. I want the two files produced that Mr. Blesky spoke about. I'd like Mr. Blesky's notes. And I would like to have this material to this board before we go into closed session for deliberation. Now, we have within the regulations, we have the, first of all, the authority to issue subpoenas ourselves as hearing officers. We have simply availed ourselves of that opportunity. We're trying to get to all of the facts that we may feel is important in this matter. Ms. Okun and Mr. Briggs may feel that they have sufficient evidence to put on their case and to make recommendations to the board. But the statutes and the regulations allow the board, acting on its own, to issue subpoenas, and I have availed ourselves of that opportunity. I did not have the subpoena issued if I was not going to seek compliance with it or would not follow through with enforcement of it. We do have powers of contempt, and I don't want to be put into a situation where we have to go down that path. I would prefer that we just have the documents produced let's say by 2 o'clock today. If we don't get them produced, then the board will just have to decide collectively whether it wants to go to the next step, which would be deciding to issue a citation for contempt.
Mr. Chair, we don't disagree with the subpoena power that you have. The basis of most of our objections have been the fact that this is basically a moving target of evidence, and things have been requested after final determination of close of discovery, if you will, and then there's more, and then there's more, and then there's more. Now we're at a point where evidence is being requested that will not be subject to being confronted by both parties. The chair has indicated his intent to terminate these proceedings today. But we're obviously not going to be in violation of a subpoena. I will note for the chair that Mr. Bleski just gave me a note that the office person is not there today and the copy machine is broken. But we will do what we can to produce the documents that the chair requested by 2 o'clock.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll have Mr. Bleski testify under oath of his best efforts to do that by 2 o'clock. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, there's...
Well, if it doesn't, we'll deal with it at that point in time.
Fair.
Mr. Chairman, if I might make offers on behalf of Water Board staff, would it be possible if Mr. Bleski brought his originals to avail them of the copier?
Well, of course.
Thing? Yes.
If your copier is broken, the documents can be brought here, and you can make use of our facility to make photocopies.
That's fine. And I also want to make it clear that in doing this production, it is in compliance with the chair's order, and we are not in any way, shape, or form waiving our objections by producing them.
That's fine. Okay. So obviously the conclusion for that first item was that the motion to quash is denied. The next item is a request for another continuance from the CSD.
The census subpoena was an act of the chairman, and I think it would be appropriate, given the fact that we just had this extensive hearing, presentation, and dialogue of evidence in front of the entire board, to seek the board as a whole's agreement or disagreement by voice vote as to the decision whether to quash the motion to deny the motion to quash, if anybody is interested in making such a motion.
Mr. Hayashi?
I'll make the motion that we quash.
Second.
I'm sorry, to be clear, you mean make the motion to deny, move that you deny the motion to quash? Is that what you mean?
That's correct.
Okay, move. Thank you.
You don't want to quash the subpoena, right?
No.
Okay, we want to make that clear. All right, is there a second?
I did that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Yeah. Anyone opposed? Okay, and I abstain from that vote. Okay, next item is a request for another continuance from the CSD, and let's see here, there's three bases for that. One, to wait until the CSD's petition to the State Board is resolved, and that petition is the one that Mr. Grimm put forth.
That's correct.
Challenging the time schedule order.
That's correct.
Okay. Two, because of my request for documents relating to ongoing CSD actions affecting compliance and my allowing both parties the opportunity to submit further briefing on CSD objections between December 2nd and December 28th. And the third component of this request was because the holidays fell in the midst of that period. Let me just address the first one, and that is the petition to the State Board, I believe, and I've read it, does not deal with the Basin Plan prohibition discharge alleged violations, correct? So the petition doesn't completely even overlap the components of the ACL
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I would just point out, however, I think we have some testimony, and I can locate it here in a minute, from the prosecution team that basically says is that what you are seeking, though, is regardless of it be the Basin Plan prohibition or the 00131 order, that you are seeking penalties under the 00131, $10,000 per day. I believe that's in the record. If you could give me a moment, I can locate it. We believe that it would be better for this board and for the district to have an understanding of what the State Water Resources Control Board is going to do with that petition. As a substantive matter, it would certainly add some guidance to your board and to the district on how to proceed with this enforcement hearing.
Can I clarify one thing?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, the ACLC alleges violations of both the time schedule order as well as the prohibitions.
Okay.
However, the penalties as justified in the staff's worksheet recommend that the penalties only be calculated based on the time schedule order violations. The board may choose to accept or reject that recommendation. The board may choose to go ahead and take the assess penalties based on the prohibition violations to the degree the evidence supports that, and or choose to assess penalties under the time schedule order. So it is both are at issue in the ACLC. It's just the staff suggestion that not to calculate on the prohibitions.
And if I could just clarify one thing about the complaint, there were findings in the worksheet under both theories. The conclusion was that the analysis of the factors was the same under either 13350 or 13308. The recommendation was to assess penalties under 13308, but the full allegations were set forth for both theories.
May I just offer a brief response?
Sure.
Thank you. I'm looking at page 35 of the transcript, commencing at line 22. This is from the prosecution team, and I quote, "The third thing is the basis for assessing penalties on 0031 versus assessing penalties on the Basin Plan prohibition. No matter what we base the penalty on, it is based on a district's oh, this is the wrong quote. That's why I'm sorry I got that. I think it's there. Right. Well, that's not the point I was trying to make. I apologize for not being able to find the exact quote. Maybe I have it here. Yes, page 74. I apologize, Mr. Chair, for going on to the wrong.
74, which volume?
I believe it's volume 1.
Okay.
I think it's on page 74, Mike, if you see it there. It starts off with, on line 6, we will talk about the Basin Plan prohibition.
Hold on.
Sure.
You want to read it for us?
Sure.
Go ahead, Mr. Seitz.
Oh, thank you.
Do you have it, Ms. Hogan? Okay.
Okay. Says, we will talk about the Basin Plan prohibition because it's relevant to the violations of the time schedule order. But our recommendation is that penalties be assessed based on the daily violation of the time schedule order. That's page 74, lines 6 through 11. And so what we're trying to point out here is that because 00131 in the time schedule order is now before the State Water Resources Control Board, it just seems that matter should be resolved prior to moving forward with this hearing before the State Water Resources Control Board. It just seems to me we're all going to be on much better footing with that decision having being made and resolved.
Well, here's my concern about that. I don't know when the State Board is going to take up the issue, what they're going to do with it. It's kind of speculative. Sometimes they just deny these things outright. And so because any order that we adopt would be put in abeyance anyway, pending an appeal by your district, I think you're protected that anything that we might do today would be put on the side burner while that issue gets resolved. So I'm strongly in favor of getting this hearing behind us, and I think that there is also a benefit, Mr. Seitz, to the CSD and to the public to know what the regional board's position is with respect to what's going on currently in Los Osos. I think that's important information that goes beyond just what's in the order itself, simply for planning purposes. So I'm in favor of moving forward for those two reasons. One is the petition really doesn't deal with the basin plan prohibition alleged violations, and so they don't really even overlap completely. It overlaps somewhat. And then the other reason is for not really knowing what the State Board is going to do and what it's not going to do with this and what time frame it's going to operate under. So I want to move forward so that we can get this behind us. Let's deal with the other two components, though, that we have identified as the basis for the request for continuance. And I guess it's the second one, then, is the documents relating to the CSD's actions affecting compliance. Do we now, Michael, have all the documents that we need or have requested affecting compliance?
We have the documents. The original document list that the CSD submitted included documents that were not actually submitted to the board. So there was a list of documents. Some of them were submitted, some of them weren't. As a follow-up, the CSD submitted additional documents that they had not mailed to us or sent to us originally, but not all of the documents that are on their original list have been submitted, and the latest document list that I passed around to the parties reflects that. So there are some documents that the CSD has on their list but have not been submitted to us, and they're marked as such, and they're marked rejected.
Okay. But part of their request for a continuance is that they were grappling with producing additional documents. Mr. Seitz, have you had the opportunity to produce the documents that you wanted to produce, whether they've been categorized as rejected or not? Have you at least been able to produce them?
Before you answer that question, I just want to clarify that we're accurately portraying the nature of the request for the continuance. My understanding of the request for the continuance was not that the CSD's three or four opportunities to produce documents that it wished to introduce were insufficient. It was that the chairman was asking for additional documents concerning ongoing compliance issues that it did not believe it had the time to deal with and didn't want to produce. So it's not the documents you and Michael are talking about are documents that were due in November, that the chair gave them extra time through December to produce, and then extra time within that period to produce the specific ones that we're talking about now, which are the ongoing compliance issues. And that was the basis of the CSD's, one of the three bases of the CSD's request for continuance, because it felt that the chairman's requests on December 4th, 6th, and 16th for any information concerning ongoing compliance were burdensome and they needed more time, although at the same time they refused to produce them. So, is that correct, or am I misreading your argument?
No, I think it's fairly accurate. On December 2nd, the chair issued orders at the conclusion of the meeting. Those orders were basically confirmed in a subsequent email from your staff, I think it was Ms. Scheffner, sent an email out on Sunday. I was surprised to see it came out on, wasn't a weekday, but it was a workday. But it came out basically confirming no new evidence and a brief outline of what this hearing was going to be composed of. I guess my point in making this is this, is as you recall, the board debated several time frames in which to conduct this continued hearing. This was, as far as I can remember, I think there was some talk about a December hearing, but most of the hearing dates were out in February, and I felt with my own vacation schedule, I don't mean to interpose my vacation as a material element into this proceedings, that I would have ample time, the district would have ample time to review the testimony, prepare for its substantive motions, and I agreed with Ms. Scheffner's later observations that I had told the chair I had no intentions of sandbag, even though it wasn't in his final order. I didn't mind giving notice of that so that everybody would be prepared to address them. But quite frankly, I wasn't prepared to spend time away from this case on issues that were, to me, clearly resolved on December 2nd. And that being testimony is closed, evidence is closed, and what happens to us from my perspective, I know the chair has a different perspective, and I honor that. I'm not trying to be disrespectful of the chair's concerns. But from my position, now I'm sitting here in my office dealing with these two fine gentlemen and other people attempting to comply with the situation of reopening evidence, reopening this new briefing schedule, new briefs, and it's just been my observation and that generally when these types of issues come up, which they do, and I don't, that there's a phone call, there's a joint conference between the prosecution team, the chair, and your team, and we iron this out. We say, well, how much time in order for you to do this new workload in order to get this to the board? How much time do you need considering this is the Christmas vacation time and the chair's prior orders? And there is a discussion between the three parties as to the appropriate timing of when do we get this information out? Should the hearing be continued? I know it's much more difficult for the board to continue hearings because there's a multiplicity of directors that are up here, and it's not like a court where the court can say, okay, we'll put this over for 2 or 3 weeks. But still, the idea of us reaching an agreement as to what you're specifically looking for, where we can talk about it, what documents are you specifically looking for, what types of briefs and things. So not that maybe I can sit back and say no, but at least everybody can have a firm understanding and whether or not a continuance would be appropriate. You know, we've gotten these orders from the chair through the chair's staff. Three or four of these emails, and they're very perplexing only because I would hope to spend this time reviewing transcripts and closing and not readdressing opening testimony and so forth. So that was the basis for that request for a continuance, was that I thought that it would be much more productive and much more efficient to have those discussions to try and address the chair's concerns and the prosecution staff's concerns and, of course, the district's concerns in responding to these three or four emails that were clearly outside of what my understanding was on December 2nd as to how this hearing was going to be conducted.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to clarify one factual point.
Yes.
Mr. Seitz didn't accurately portray the first direction given by the chair through me on December the 4th, which was the first direction after the hearing, that did not say no new further evidence
absolute. It said the only, it said no new evidence, but that the chairman can foresee if there are an exception to that, there are new facts or information available concerning the CSD's efforts to come into compliance or steps that will further inhibit or delay compliance with the TSO. If any new information arises on that front, the chair and the board will want to be apprised of that. That was the first statement that the chairman was modifying his ruling of no new evidence, and that was 2 days after the last hearing. That was followed up on December 6th with a specific request for minutes and resolutions. That was followed up on December 16th with another reiteration of that request. That was followed up with a subpoena, which we have in this hearing this morning, reduced to a determination that these are locatable in a handful of files and could be produced in a couple hours. And as for the additional burdens that keep being cited to in the responses to these interim communications between the last day of hearing and this one, the briefs that were invited were opportunities given by the chair to the CSD to further articulate its due process concerns or objections on the records. Those were not new burdens. They were opportunities given to better articulate the legal bases and factual bases for the objections that have been posed so that the chairman could give them fair consideration before today's hearing. The CSD, in some manner, in some ways, chose to avail itself of those briefing opportunities. In some ways, it didn't. But I just want to make clear that those were not new mandates. They were supplemental briefing opportunities to clarify positions.
And let me add to that, Mr. Seitz, because I want you to know that I listened to the tapes of the of December 1st and 2nd, and I wanted to make sure that we had covered all of the objections that you had raised through the proceeding, and so that we were taking extra measures to not let anything slip through the cracks. So that's why you began to see requests really from me to give you the opportunity to flush out and to make sure that we understood exactly what these objections were, so that we would know what kind of remedy to engage to address them. So that was the basis for it. I know things could have been done in a different fashion with respect to my request for additional information, but I deemed it to be most efficient and expedient to lay out some very detailed emails and send them in that fashion, because that would just both tell the prosecution team and your team, this is what I'm looking for. We don't need to debate it. If there was an issue that needed to be addressed, you guys could call on the phone, try to set up a conference call and say, you know what, this is going to be a sheer impossibility. And I don't really see the need for the continuance based on that, because there was the better part of a month from December 2nd to today, even given the holidays. Okay. And you know, with litigation, things go very quickly, and you guys have multiple attorneys staff to work on things like this. Okay. So
can I just make one?
Go ahead.
I understand what I think what the chair's ruling is deny the motion for a continuance, but I just want to make sure how I perceive this, just so that there's, and how the district through myself perceive this. I view these emails as requests for additional information. We're going to get to some substantive due process motions that I've made here, but I want the chair and the board to understand. Because I raised new issues here, and I say this in my preamble, I'm not waiving the objections that I made at the prior evidentiary hearing. I'd be happy to restate them on the record here, but my take on this was to put in what procedural and substantive due process issues I intended that to raise that I haven't raised in the past, and that's what is in my December 22nd, 2005 email.
Okay, so unless there's an objection by my colleagues, I'm going to overrule the motion to continue the hearing so that we can proceed. All right. next item, there was an issue raised as to an ex-party contact that was made.
I'm not raising it. I mean, maybe my co-counsel's raising that. I'm not raising it.
Well, it was in Mr. Onstant's communication. Are you renewing an objection?
No, so that we can move on, we'll withdraw that.
Okay. All right, now we can get to the due process objections that were raised. Okay. Ms. Schaffner, do you want to summarize for us what we have kind of gleaned from the record and from the correspondence from the CSD as to what their outstanding due process issues are?
Yeah, and I apologize if I'm being dancer or not understanding or not fairly characterizing. I will certainly expect that you will correct me if I did any of this wrong, Mr. Seitz. But my understanding from your latest briefing submitted on the 22nd, and this is when it finally started to gel for me what the nature of what I think your objection, procedural and substantive due process objections are, is that you believe that the there is an that the ACLC is somehow holding the CSD itself liable for all the discharges of individual dischargers, that the CSD does not control the waste of within the district. That is that though they're in the that parts of the CSD are not in the prohibition zone, parts of it are. I'm not sure if I got that right, but your basic argument is you think the ACL holds the CSD liable for discharges over which it has no control.
That's correct. As you may recall, and I've had many fine discussion with your board regarding this very issue as I flipped up the prohibition zone and kept trying to advise the board that it is inappropriate to hold the community service district responsible for the violation of the prohibition, and I still believe the 00131 is based on the general prohibition of the time schedule order to sewer the prohibition zone. I don't want to mix apples and oranges here, but I kept getting the idea that what the ACL complaint was aimed at, and I can quote Mr. Briggs's letter to the district transmitting ACL complaint, was the concept that because the district didn't build the wastewater treatment project for the entire prohibition zone, that somehow the amount of penalties, when you take a look at the original and maybe the ongoing, because I don't know how many versions of the worksheet are out there anymore, but the whole concept was based on these horrendous discharges from the entire prohibition zone. And my concern was is that the prosecution staff was attempting to say because the district didn't build the wastewater treatment project to sewer the whole prohibition zone, that this $11 million that we were that was before your board was aimed at that issue, the failure to build the wastewater treatment project. Therefore, you are going to be held responsible for all these individual discharges. With, and you'll see a PowerPoint on this within the prohibition zone. I kept trying to say there's no nexus without a plant, without having a wastewater treatment plant in process, up and serving the community. There was no way that the district, A, could be responsible because they're only an individual discharger, and B, they could not pass on the fines within the prohibition zone because the prohibition zone itself was an empty shell. Now, I have, since I raised this, we've had two correspondents back from the prosecution team, I believe, clarifying this. One is their rebuttal brief, and I'm going to read to you. It says that the district argues that the complaint should be stricken because Water Code Section 13301 applies to persons who discharge waste
and therefore a district cannot be held accountable for discharges of waste from individual discharges within the prohibition zone, as alleged in the ACL complaint and the proposed worksheet for assessment. The prosecution team's response. Neither the complaint nor the worksheet, and I disagree with this completely, alleges any such thing. The basis for the four cease and desist orders, which I believe are not at issue here, the time schedule order and the ACE on the ACL complaint are the district's own discharges, which is basically the Bay Ridge subdivision, Vista del Oro, and the fire station. I think this is further clarified.
Well, does that then satisfy your concern?
Well, as long as the chair, this is resolved this way, I hate to be sitting up here saying, putting our position, and if the chair says you're right, you're only going to be held responsible for those three discharges, then I'll be satisfied. The third, and I'm reading from the page 35, I think, of the first transcript, the first December 1st transcript. The third thing is the basis for assessing a penalty under 00131 versus assessing a penalty on the basin plan prohibition. No matter what we base the penalty on, it is based on the district's discharges at Bay Ridge Estates, Vista del Oro, and the fire department. It is not based on the basin-wide prohibition or discharges of other residents other than the residents in these two subdivisions. Now, if that is the chair and this board's position, then I believe my substantive due process argument is resolved.
Okay, well, let me say this. The board doesn't have a position with that. This is staff's recommendation. I will tell you that was always my understanding in reading the ACL, that they were recommending under one of their two theories that you would be held responsible for only the discharges from your own facilities and not from the community at large. So that's always been my understanding, and not everyone else in the community.
Perhaps we could let Ms. Okun clarify this for the prosecution team, but my understanding was the same as the chairman's, and that the citation to the factual threat, the water quality and health and safety risks posed by ongoing unsewered discharges from the rest of the community within the district were a factual context and implication that is a water quality context for the failure to get the sewer built, not a basis for assessing a violation. The enforcement policy adopted by the state board, as well as the statutes, require that the board consider water quality implications as well as many other things. So it was my understanding was that was given as context for that discussion. Is that correct, Ms. Okun?
That's correct, and in fact, the next 2.5 paragraphs after the rebuttal citation that Mr. Seitz just read says exactly that, that those are factors for the board to consider in determining the amount.
So just so I have this clear, because this has a major impact on what I've been trying to achieve here, and maybe it's just my own misunderstanding and my discussion with the board, is that the district is only being held responsible here today for three discharges: Bay Ridge, Vista del Oro, and the fire department.
Under one of two theories in the ACL.
Right. But we're not being held responsible for the general discharge within the prohibition zone for the failure in violation of 8313.
Well, in violation of the basin plan prohibition.
That's it. Okay.
Okay.
That's what I'm...
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So if that's the ruling, then...
Well, you know what? It's not a ruling, because I don't know what we're going to end up doing. But let me say this. Due process is notice and an opportunity to be heard. You're getting an opportunity to be heard on all of these issues. Then this goes more to the notice issue, I believe, in your argument. And so if the board comes up with something later... that maybe doesn't jive with what your notion is of what notice should have been, then you've got an issue at that point. It may not be with this board. It would be with some appellate review.
I feel like if I say anything, I'm going to be interpreted as concurring with you, and I don't want to sound, as I said in my the other day, I don't believe in arguing with the judge.
Well,
because
I don't Mr. Seitz, I won't take it personally if you want to concur with me.
Okay. I appreciate your humor. I don't concur with that statement. I think notice is a key to process, and it's certainly a key to the district's position to know precisely what discharges and that we are being held accountable for. And I've continually made the argument that we can't be held accountable for the discharges of other residents. Your prosecution team's rebuttal seems to confirm that, and their direct testimony before this board seems to confirm that.
Okay. All right, let's go on to the second then.
Does that dispose of all of your due process objections, Mr. Seitz?
No, there's one more that I listed in my...
Okay.
Okay, and let me see if I... I was afraid I may have collapsed them or teased them out when they should have been collapsed them. Do I understand correctly that your second objection to due process, motion to strike based on due process obligations... Here I'm a little less clear. Is it because the penalties might affect the budgets of the subdivisions within the CSD, or is it based on an allegation that your equal protection rights are violated by not assessing penalties against those subdivisions within the CSD? I'm not real clear on that.
Thank you for the opportunity. First of all, I want to make sure that there's a clear understanding. We haven't waived our other procedural due process issues that we raised during the December 1st and December 2nd hearing. These are the ones that I intended to raise prior to closing, and doesn't necessarily reflect back. This isn't an accumulative restating all my due process objections that I had during the during the evidentiary hearing. First,
to be clear, Mr. Seitz,
yes.
That is not our understanding, at least the chairman and I have discussed this since that hearing. There has been no citations to law or fact or argument to flesh out any of the general prior objections you just tried to preserve. We can't address it. The board cannot give you a remedy when no cause of action has been stated. So if you want to abandon those objections, you can have that. You can do so. If you want to support those objections, you've had, by my count, at least 3 written opportunities and 2 days of hearing to do that. This is the 3rd day. So if you really want it to be considered, I would suggest that you just lay it out there now.
Okay, thank you. First of all, what my concern was is now that when you're enforcing the second part of this, which is the basin plan prohibition, which is the violation of 8313, at Vista Del Oro subdivision, the Bay Ridge subdivision, and the fire department, that as a matter of process, that you need to follow the processes of either a cease and desist order or a cleanup and abatement order in order to give those subdivisions and those septic tank systems the ability to provide a remedy. In other words, you turn around and you say to yourself, okay, we have these, and you'll see these on the PowerPoint, you're going to see these three operations that are run by the district pursuant to zones of benefit that have their own separate budgets, that have that are managed as independent little zones to operate, that what's going on here is that you're finding them directly for violations of 80 through the district. I want to make sure that there's a distinction there for direct violations of 8313. And the point that I wanted to make and clear is that A, it's been the history of this board. It's articulated in the regional water quality, state water resource control board, state water resource quality board's enforcement policies, that and the prior actions of this board, that you've always sought enforcement against individual dischargers, which are these three organizations, through cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders, because they come with a specific timeline. If the regional board is concerned about those discharges, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be, that the way to go about doing that is not alleging a direct violation of 8313, but in the alternative is to issue cease and desist orders that gives this board, your staff, and the LOCSD staff the opportunity to come up with a fix. You're sitting here under one theory saying we're going to fine you folks those zones of benefit $11 million, and maybe now it's $32 million, looking at the what got emailed to us late last night, for these discharges when the very fix is less than $11 million. And it just seems to me it's just that the correct way and the historical method that this board has used and is what's recommended in the policies is to issue individual cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders to give the discharger, being the district, the ability to address those individual discharges and not lump them with a direct violation of 8313.
Mr. Chair, this board did that 6 years ago. 6 years ago, in 1999, the board issued cease and desist orders for those four discharges. And those cease and desist orders had time schedules in them. They were based on the solution that the district proposed to resolve those discharges, which was to build the treatment plant. A year later, the board adopted the time schedule order, in part because the district said that it needed to extend the schedules in the cease and desist order, and the board included an extended schedule in the time schedule order. The four discharges aren't separate entities. The cease and desist orders, I agree, were not alleging violations of the cease and desist orders, but those were the orders that were the basis for the time schedule order. The discharger named in the time schedule order is the district because it owns and operates the four facilities. I don't know how to make that any more clear.
Mr. Seitz, I don't see this as really a due process issue anyway. I think that you'll have an opportunity to argue this further. If you feel that some other remedy is appropriate, you can argue that to the board. But I think what's in the ACL is going to stand at this point and not get amended. And you can take issue with what staff is recommending, you know, as a remedy for what's going on and what you think the board should or should not do. But I don't see it as germane to something that the board itself can fix at this point with the pleading or the process.
Mr. Chairman, if I can point out one other point for the record.
Go ahead.
Of the four law firms that the CSD has engaged to advise or participate in this matter, it's gotten a little confusing because now I have for me a petition filed, actually a renewed renewal, reactivation of the petition filed 5 years ago on the TSO by the CSD. Mr. Grimm filed on behalf of the CSD, and I believe Mr. Seitz submitted that as an attachment to one of his recent submittals to the chair. The points and authorities by Mr. Grimm specifically says that the district consequently can only be held accountable for those four service areas over which it has control and from which it discharges wastewater. There seems to be some tension between what you're saying. You're saying that the CSD should not be held accountable for the discharges from these facilities, and Mr. Grimm is saying that it can.
No. Well, I'm sorry. Maybe I misstated. I think that the district, under my interpretation of the rules, is a discharger for the purposes of the 8313 for the three septic tanks systems that it operates for Vista Del Oro, Bay Ridge, thank you, and the fire station. I'm in complete agreement. But those are the only discharges that we can be held responsible for.
Okay.
And the way that the board has traditionally and consistent with the state water, I gotta spell this out, state water, quality control board enforcement policies are that you issue against individual discharges either cease and desist orders or cleanup and abatement orders. And
okay, I don't think we have a due process violation here. I think it goes more towards your argument as to what might be an appropriate remedy for what's going on, and you'll have opportunity to restate that again during closing.
Then picking up on Ms. Scheffner's other issues, we have always raised the objection as to the timing of these hearings, if I have to restate them now so everybody's clear on them, on the basis of notice and opportunity to be heard. And I quoted a section, it's an old case law that says the amount of due process that an agency is entitled to or anybody is entitled to is directly related to the penalties. And we've continually been handling this hearing on an expedited basis and with a threat of an $11 million fine. And I've raised that in the past. I want to make sure if I'm supposed to renew it now, that it be renewed now. And so that is being renewed. I've also raised issues on the chair's ruling that our cross-examination of opposing witnesses was going to be deducted from our case in chief time. I've raised that on numerous occasions. I've always been cited back to an email that Mr. McClendon sent to the Ms. Scheffner in response to some questions, which basically stated when they asked these questions that we somehow stipulated to 2 hours. I have reviewed that email, and I can find it in my binder here. Two things. One is we gave no time for cross-examination. We only gave time when we estimated 2 hours for at least 2 hours for our case in chief. And as far as authority goes, I want to cite to you Government Code Section 11513B. Each party shall have these rights to call and examine witnesses, to introduce exhibits, to cross-examine opposing witnesses on any matter relevant to the issues, even though that matter was not covered. And it just seems to me the continual indication that when we were cross-examining or giving our ability to cross-examine the prosecution team's witnesses, we always had the clock running on our case in chief. And if I have to continue to raise these objections, I'm raising them again right now, and I'm citing you the California Government Code that addresses that section.
Okay, Mr. Seitz, was there any witnesses that you were not able to cross-examine on the December 1st and 2nd hearings?
Absolutely. And the reason why I say that is this. is that you put tremendous strain on myself and the other attorneys up here to cross-examine witnesses to figure out what questions you can ask them and what questions you shouldn't, because the time is ticking against your case in chief. And I believe, you know, that I know I would have had additional questions back then. If I'm required now to re-raise these issues, I need to make sure they're clear on the record, that by me just doing the substantive and procedural due process motions that we've already went through, that I haven't somehow waived those objections.
Well,
I don't want to clear I haven't.
You haven't waived those. My concern was that I had given you all the time that you requested through December 1st and 2nd. I didn't hear anything from you that, I really need some more time because I had some more questions for Mr. Thompson or Mr. Briggs. So I'm asking you now, do you have any specific questions or areas of examination that you felt you were not able to cover December 1st or 2nd that you would like to revisit during this hearing today?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes.
Okay, and could you, with some specificity, tell me who you need to examine and how much time you need for each of those witnesses?
Their prosecution team. First of all, there's prosecution team witnesses that we would we'd want to call. I can't give you a timeline. I would much prefer to have my notes from my meetings for the evidentiary portion of this, but I'm sure I can go back to my office and resurrect them. You know how this works, and I'm sorry I'm being flippant here. From a lawyer's perspective, a question begs another question. Every lawyer knows that. For to sit back and say, how much time are you going to need to cross-examine witnesses, in itself places a limitation on our ability to cross-examine. I have no intentions of filibustering this hearing, so on and so forth, but and I don't know. So I think that we would also, just as a side note, we did want to have Mr. Miller come back up and make a presentation on nitrates, because this isn't quite exactly what the chair had in mind, I think, in his other emails to us, but we have come into subsequent information regarding nitrates in the groundwater basin due to the most recent studies. It's a very short presentation, but we would also want the opportunity to put that on as an informational item.
Well, that's not cross-examination.
No,
that's your own witness.
I agree.
And he was here on the 1st and 2nd. Michael?
No.
Daniel?
Mr. Chair, I have to register an objection to going into more cross-examination, to entertaining this idea that due process has been violated here. I think the record will show that the chair provided extra time to the district, that when the chair asked if the district had any more questions for witnesses, the district did not. That part of the hearing was closed, and I think it should stay closed.
And as a refresher,
is that the sense of the board? Mr. Hayashi, Mr. Shalcross,
Mr.
Jeffries.
Right. Mr. Thomas, maybe refresh our memory on how much time you actually gave last time, just so we're all current.
Extra time?
Yeah. Okay. Initially, the chairman said 2 hours for the
two hours
case,
for both parties.
But there were numerous additional times presented as Mr. Press just
approximately
as Dr. Press just.
30 minutes was added.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I don't argue with the generosity of the chair to extend time. I want everybody to understand that. But the fact of the matter is, these generosities were welcomed. But they came after the witnesses were sent down, and they had more to do with our case in chief. You may recall that the limitations on cross-examining Mr. Polhemus directly based on the extended timelines. But I guess the bottom line is I don't argue with the notion that the chair extended my time to put the case in chief on. I don't want to make sure that everybody's clear on that.
Okay. And I know that there was an argument, Mr. Seitz, that you had wanted Mr. Grimm to be available to participate in this, and I guess you're waiving that specific objection because I don't see him here.
Right.
He was your expert lawyer.
Right. And I appreciate, and that was part of the time, as you may recall, for extending this out. We had, and I appreciate that from the chair, we've had extensive time to review the pleadings and our response and our closing argument with Mr. Grimm, and I appreciate the opportunity that the chair gave in extending the meeting for that purposes.
Let me say this. I'm sensitive to what my colleagues want me to do and want done with this issue. I'm also sensitive to your concerns about having sufficient time to examine, you know, witnesses or cross-examine witnesses. I'm also very aware that judges and hearing officers can and do limit the amount of time that a party has to put on a case and to go through witnesses. I would like to know if you can be specific with a time frame and specific witnesses that you feel you really needed to cover, and this is really an important part of your case that you felt was really set aside because of the time constraint. And I would like to hear what the request is, if there was some specific witnesses, and I don't just mean the prosecution team, but specific witnesses in a specific amount of time as possible. Because I can't give you an unlimited amount of time for cross-examination. That I'm not going to do.
Mr. Chair, could I suggest maybe a five-minute break so I could consult with the other two attorneys on my side so I could come back and give you that information?
Okay, we can do that. Let me finish with this category we're calling due process right here so we can cover that. Ms. Schaffner, is there anything else left? Well, there was another issue, I think, about the budgeting and funding sources, and you felt that I think there was a due process issue that you might be assessed a penalty that would create a problem because it would be pulling on sub-districts or something of that nature.
Well, I don't know if that was more argument or substantive or procedural due process. The issue that I wanted to make, and I'm going to continue to make, is that the district operates zones of benefit. You can't sit back and hold these zones of benefit responsible or fine them to the tune that the or do otherwise than through a cease and desist order or a cleanup and abatement order, hold these subdivisions responsible for the entire violation of the prohibition zone or the entire alleged violation of 00131.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, why is that a due process
issue
here?
I would agree with that, and I think Mr. Seitz has kind of tendered that as more maybe of an argument than a true due process issue, and that's the way I'll receive it. So you'll have opportunity to address the board on that during closing. Okay, I think that kind of covers those due process issues.
I didn't have any others in my notes, unless the CSD had something. Okay.
Okay, why don't we take a quick break? And you said 5 minutes is enough?
I just need to step out in the hallway.
Okay, so I'm going to try to get us back here right at 10 after the hour so we can move forward.
You better get with him first.
Yeah. Can we come back?
Okay, folks, let's take your seats. It's 10 after. Would everyone please take their seats?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Seitz indicated to us during the break that the reason they want to put Rob Miller back on is to present the most recent sampling data, which shows that nitrate levels have actually gone up and that that testimony will only take about 5 to 10 minutes. And if that's the case and that's all he's going to testify about, then prosecution staff joins his request to present that evidence.
Okay. If there's no objection, then?
No objections.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Before we get to the issue that you guys just deliberated about and over, let me just mention this to the public. There's going to be no public comment period today. This was a continued hearing. Public comment was had, I believe, on December 2nd, and we had sufficient public comment at that point in time. There's only a little bit of additional new testimony today dealing with the issue of compliance, non-compliance subsequent to December 2nd. And so in order that we keep things moving along and not open this up to another couple of hours of public comment, we will have no public comment today.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Maybe better clarify between public comment and public forum, because public forum is on the agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffries. I do have a copy of the agenda. And we have public forum, which would be that any member of the public can address the board on anything other than this agenda item. So, and that will be sometime after 2 p.m. today. All right, that is public forum, not public comment on this item. Okay, so Mr. Seitz and Mr. Onstott, would you like to tell us what you came up with?
Yeah. First of all, we've agreed we're both very hungry. But secondly of all, I'm sorry for the humor, but I'm just part of me.
But you notice how it really keeps you focused?
It does.
I mean, it's true. You really only need a little bit of water and some crackers, and you'll be able to go the whole day.
Your constitution is much different than mine, then, Mr. Chair. We would like to call back Darren Pohemus. Both Mr. Onstott and Mr. McClendon believe that that would be somewhere between 15 to 20 minutes. I would like to call back Mr. Briggs. Myself and Mr. Onstott would like to call back Mr. Briggs, and we estimate that to be 20 minutes. Additionally, if we're going to break for lunch, I do think that Mr. Miller's testimony is going to be very short, but I think somewhat relevant. And basically, as what Ms. Oaken has pointed out, it's the latest nitrate samplings. I think it's, what, two charts? Three slides are going to be very quick. But they do, to some extent, contradict his testimony that he presented to the, I can represent to you, I've seen the slides. They somewhat contradict his testimony that he gave. The district is in no position, nor do they want to be in any position, where they would lead this board or your staff to conclude that we had new information and we withheld it from the board without giving an opportunity to present it.
Okay, let's look at the request for essentially 20 minutes for these two categories. Normally, the examination of a witness is done by one lawyer. Was your suggestion that you were going to split that up between lawyers?
It would be 20 minutes combined. My issues are somewhat different than Mr. Onstott, Mr. McClendon's, and so I have no interest in, for myself, that's why Mr. McClendon and Mr. Onstott would be in charge of Mr. Polhemus, and Mr. myself and Mr. Onstott would be the cross-examination. Obviously, each of us have a little different expertise and a little bit greater knowledge of the precise areas that we want to cross-examine. I don't want to find myself cross-examining into an area that I know very little about.
Okay, let's look at this then. Starting with, how much time do we have coming into today, Michael?
40 minutes.
Okay, so
40 minutes for the CSD.
Okay, so the CSD has already 40 minutes, and I mean, the prosecution team has, I think, an abundance of time, and it just keeps on growing. So what you're asking for essentially is an additional about 40 minutes to add on top of the 40 minutes that you have.
That's correct.
Okay, and then some time for the three slides, like 10 minutes.
We're hoping. Okay. I'll let Rob, how much time do you think you need for those three slides? 10 would be great.
Okay.
Could we have an offer of proof on the cross-examination of Mr. Briggs and Mr. Polhemus?
Okay. Mr. Seitz, Mr. Onstad, do you want to?
Well, why there is an offer of proof requested, I don't know. By definition, the offer of proof is that the scope of cross-examination is the same scope as that on direct. So if what they're asking for is, do we want to lay the questions out so the prosecution can prepare the witness, we decline to do that. We will commit, however, to keeping our cross-examination questions within the scope, for example, Mr. Polhemus in his position with the State Board in administering the SRF, and Mr. Briggs' function as the XO of the board.
Well, but is the scope going to be solely with areas that you did not cover before? Okay. If that is so, then I think that would be okay. If there's areas that you didn't get to cover, I just don't want you to be going over prior testimony and rehashing that.
I agree, Mr. Chair. One other point of clarification. You mentioned that we had 40 minutes. Is that is exclusive of closing, correct?
No, that was the closing that was given to you before.
So it is still the chair's view that each side will be given a total of 40 minutes closing?
No. What we have coming into this is
40 minutes
is what the CSD had coming into this, and how much?
About an hour and 2 hours and 15 minutes, I think.
Two hours and 15 minutes is what they had accumulated based on additional time being given to both parties. So prosecution team has 2.5. Was it 2.5?
2 hours and 15 minutes, I believe.
Okay, 2 hours, 15 minutes.
I think was it 153 minutes?
Okay.
2 hours.
However, I believe Ms. Okun had told us that she didn't think she was going to use half that.
Right. No, that I understand. I just want to be clear how much time, because the agenda said each side had 40 minutes for closing. I just want to be sure that in the tally that you're doing, Mr. Chair, if that's inclusive, that number that you just gave is inclusive or exclusive of closing?
Here's what I will do with this, and we'll see whether my colleagues want to go along with this at this point. But I would give you the essentially you're looking for 50 additional minutes plus the 40 you had before. That would be 90 minutes, an hour and a half. I'll let you divide it up any way you want, okay? If you decide you want to shift that around, take from your closing,
to the examination, I'll leave that up to you. I won't interfere with that. But I'm going to be pretty hard and fast this time that that number is going to stick. And I'm not going to be adding any time to it unless there is something absolutely extraordinary that develops that nobody could anticipate. Now, is Mr. Polhemus available? Is he on?
After I got the request from Ms. Schaffner to ensure that the witnesses would be available, I did confirm that he'd be in his office today, and he asked that I follow up with him when we had more information about what time or whether he'd actually be needed, and I didn't have any further information. So we had overlapping vacations, I think. He said he would be in all day. He's maybe at lunch.
Well, it sounds like we need to get let me first deal with this. How does the board feel about allowing the district the additional time it's requested? Dr.
Well,
Press?
Well, another 50 minutes, I don't really see the need for that, but I'll defer to you, Mr. Chair. If you want to call it 90 minutes total and be firm about that, because I think we do need to get to the point where we deliberate and we do need to close this hearing. So if that's your recommendation, I'll go along with it, but as long as it's really firm.
All right, Mr. Jeffries.
Well, Mr. Chair, I agree with Dr. Press, but I have a different caveat to this. Is the attorneys saying that they're not trying to filibuster, but to continue to ask for more and more time. You've been extremely liberal on the time that you have given them to extend them the extra time that they've asked for. And I think there has to be a time and a place that we say enough is enough. It's the chair's prerogative. If you want to allow the additional time, I'll go along with the chair's prerogative. But I will say I'm not interested in going beyond that time. I think that's more than sufficient. They've basically use a lot of their times reiterating points of their presentation several times, and they could have curtailed some of that information and been more direct in what they were really trying to point to us.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Press and Mr. Jeffries.
And Mr. Hayashi?
I will agree also.
Okay.
But let's just hold it at the 90.
Okay. All right. So you've got a total of 90 minutes. Use it any way you wish. And somehow we should let Mr. Polhemus know that he is going to be needed. And is there someone that can you send him an email?
Yeah, actually, I can.
Okay.
Can we?
Do we have a time estimate?
We're going to put Rob on now, or do you want to
Well,
play?
Let's. We have some other issues. Okay. Unfortunately, we haven't completed yet that are okay. Preliminary in matter. And you know what? I think we can go right into that extra time that you've been granted if you want to then put him on, and we'll get Mr. Polhemus on. And that might be a half hour from now.
Then 10 minutes.
Oh, he's right here. Okay, wonderful. All right. Okay.
And just because there's been some confusion in the past, I want to make sure we're clear that the 90 minutes, when you say use as you see fit, that means allocate as they see fit between the additional cross-examination, the additional direct testimony by Mr. Miller, the rebuttal and closing, correct?
It's everything.
Okay.
It's just everything. Rebuttal.
And we understand that, but we would just... The testimony that Mr. Miller puts on right now, I've just said 2 minutes, but I would hope that if the if you have questions of Mr. Miller, that we're not sitting here having these things deducted from our time.
You know, and I have not done that. I have stopped the clock, and if he's got up to 10 minutes. You've been given the time. If he does it faster, you've made out.
Thank you.
Okay? All right.
Excuse me, before we move on,
yes.
I'm sending an email to Mr. Polhemus. What time do you want me to tell him?
Well, I would say in maybe 45 minutes he should be available, if possible. Okay, this next category.
Did Chair?
Yes.
Can you give us and the audience some time? When do you plan on breaking for lunch?
Well, I don't know right now. My sense is that I was hoping to utilize the lunch period so the board could go into closed session and deliberate, so that we're doing two things at once. And in order to do that, we have to have our closing arguments completed. So,
well, Mr. Chair, then give me some approximate time when that's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would put us out at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, that's if you're allowing 90 minutes.
Well, obviously, we're not going to be able to do what I wanted to do, which was to go into a closed session during lunch. So, you know, I would like to... Let's look at this again, Mr. Jeffries, when we've gone through the rest of these objections that we've got and issues, and see how far we can get into their additional time with some of the witnesses. That might be when we break at that point, and I don't know when that is, but before 1:30. In other words, by 1:30 we'll have lunch. We'll break for lunch.
Well, what that it brought that question to mind is because if you're asking Mr. Bohemus to be available at 1:15, I was wondering what period of time thereafter this was going to happen.
I got an email from Mr. Bohemus. He's actually listening to this, and he says he's standing by.
Okay, good.
Good for him.
So,
good.
Darren, send me another email if you need to.
Okay, good. All right. Let's continue. Ms. Schaffner, let's see. Page 5. Oh, God. All right.
And I'm sorry to belabor the time point, but there's been much testimony on the due process point and how much time is appropriate. But I want to make clear for the record, triggering off of Mr. Seitz's just recent statement about not deducting board time questions from the CSD's time. In addition to the 2 hours and 40 minutes granted to the CSD and to staff the last meeting for their direct examination, cross-examination time, there were hours of questions by the board which were not deducted from anybody's time. And in those, in response, and there were hours of testimony elicited from both sides, and mostly the CSD, of giving them the opportunity to address substantive issues in response to board questions. So I don't want the record to make it look like there were only, you know, a limited number, that the specified minutes were the only testimony allowed. There was something like 13 hours of hearing.
Well, I think we've allowed a lot of time for a lot of argument, you know, to come in, even at this point, through the proceedings so far. So I feel comfortable with where we're headed. Okay, I'd like to get to the document issues now. Let's see. Updated exhibit summary and rulings document. Ms. Schaffner, do you want to describe for us the updated document prepared by Michael Thomas for us?
Yes, I believe everybody got a copy of the updated exhibit list. It's entitled Master Document List 1 and Master Document List 2, I believe, as well as the prosecution team's index. What that document does is an updated version of what was handed out at the December 1st and 2nd hearing, which it has been updated to reflect the documents that were subsequently provided by the CSD that they inadvertently didn't provide on their first proffer in November. And the documents that were, the chair gave the CSD an additional period of time to provide the documents they thought they had. Those documents that were provided by the additional extended deadline have been admitted. There are also some documents that the chair is recommending not be admitted, including approximately 33 hours of DVD DVD videos of hearings, which were presented to the board on December the 12th, I believe. The chair felt that was there submitted too late for any reasonable period of time to review those and ask for a summary of what was on those videos in order to admit them. No summary was forthcoming, and based on the fact that any probative value of those DVDs not having any summary to know what they might be is outweighed by the risk of a undue consumption of time, the chair is exercising his authority under Section Government Code Section 11513, Subdivision F, to exclude the DVDs. There are also a number of documents in that list that were listed but or not listed, which were added, which were documents produced in a Public Records Act request from the Tribune. And I believe those were not in the index, but they were provided on the extended deadline. And the chair has been considering whether to admit those. And the question for the CSD is whether they were one of the documents where they intended to be submitted in November, or these new documents within the scope of ongoing compliance efforts. Because if it doesn't fit into one of those categories, there's so far no basis for admitting them. And that also ties into the outstanding allegation by the CSD that the board has failed to comply with Public Records Act requests. So maybe we could deal with both those issues now. First, I guess I would ask, has the Public Records Act issue been resolved? Do you feel that you have received the documents that were requested by the CSD?
I'm not sure what Public Records Act request you're talking about.
That was in, let me find the...
Was that the one from Ms. Tacker?
Yeah.
That came in is really a...
it was...
A CSD board member using a Public Records Act request.
That's correct. That's correct. I believe Mr. Onstott's letter requests cites to this. It's dated December 12th. Mr. Onstott says that the CSD is awaiting full response from the regional board staff, and that asks that these documents be added to the record, and that and references the board, the chair, to the Tribune's website for these documents. After much research and comparing of documents and comparing of documents provided by CSD to the previously provided index, Mr. Thomas determined that these were that about 200 documents that were provided on the 12th that weren't on the index appear to be the ones that were referenced on the Tribune website. And I infer those are the ones that you were talking about for the Public Records Act request. This is your objection, your proffer. I would ask that you clarify.
I think we
are mixing up two things. The first thing is that Julie Tacker, who's a director of the CSD, made a Public Records Act request and said that she was acting in her capacity as a private citizen, even though the request was made very shortly before this hearing started. Our response was that she is not a member of the public, which is defined to include public representatives, but in the interests of good government, we agreed to produce all the documents that she requested as if it were a valid Public Records Act request, and we did that. At one point, there was some question about whether we had, it was a request for emails, and at one point, there was a question about whether we had additional emails that we hadn't already produced on our backup tapes, and Mr. Packard researched that, and it was determined that we didn't have any additional emails. Okay. In addition to the emails that we had electronically, we advised Ms. Tacker to come in and look at our paper files, which she did, in case there were emails that we no longer had electronically that had been printed and filed. And she did that before the December 1 hearing. So there are no further documents. The other issue
is... Can I just check in with Mr. Onstott just to make sure that that request has been resolved? That do you concur with what Ms. Okun has represented?
Yes and no. That some documents were produced, but I'm not going to represent that the Public Records Act request was honored by either the state or the regional board because it was denied. And saying that we deny your request because you're working for a public entity, we take issue with, and that issue will be decided in a different forum. So the validity of the denial, I agree with Ms. Okun that we're kind of mixing apples and oranges here. I'm not here to say that the Public Records Act requests have been complied with because our position is that they have not. I will say that some documents have been produced voluntarily by both the state and the regional board.
Well, wait a minute. I don't want to mix things up here. Did you get the documents that were requested in the Public Records Act request? Did you get those?
No.
Okay. Do you know which ones were withheld?
I have yet to receive one.
We gave him all the emails we had. Not him. I'm sorry. There were two Public Records Act requests. One was to the regional board from Ms. Tacker. We provided Ms. Tacker with all the responsive documents in our possession, other than documents that were privileged or not otherwise subject to disclosure. There was a second Public Records Act request, and the response to that request was what I think those 200 pages of documents were. Now, I know that the district submitted a Public Records Act request to the State Board, and the Tribune submitted a Public Records Act request to the State Board. I think those documents were in response to the Tribune's Public Records Act request, but I could be wrong about that. The district can clarify that. And as I recall, I submitted a relevance objection to those documents because they included a lot of public comments on the state revolving fund loan.
I agree with that. There are two Public Records Act requests that I'm aware of. One was from Ms. Tacker to the prosecution team. One was from the Telegram Tribune to the State Board. The State Board responded, provided documents to the Telegram Tribune. Those documents were put on the Telegram Tribune's website, and those documents were submitted to us by the CSD. And I have listed those documents at the end of Master Document List 1. So they're included here.
So what documents haven't been produced, Mr. Onstad? I want to make sure I understand.
There were two Public Records Act that requests that I made myself and got back denial letters. And in that denial letter, it says, we'll produce them voluntarily and give you the cost sometime around the end of January.
I can't speak for the State Board. There's two different entities here. If there was a Public Records Act request to the State Board that's at issue, we can't resolve it here.
Let's see. Was that a request that came to this regional board or to the State Board?
There, like I said, there were two of them. One came to the regional board.
Okay.
One went to the State Board.
Okay. Well, the one with the State Board, that's a separate agency.
Okay.
I mean, we don't control their files and documents.
I understand.
Okay.
And
is the first one Ms. Tacker's request, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Has Ms. Tacker received the documents that were spelled out in her specific request?
She received some documents, yes. There's no way of telling if all that were responsive were received.
Okay. Did the prosecution team make a representation that they had reviewed the records and this is all that they could produce in response to the request?
May have been, but I'm not aware of that. I don't know.
Okay.
We did.
Okay. Well, if they've made that representation, I don't know where else we could go with this at this point in time. That's their representation. Okay.
And for the record question, I think what is being proffered by the CSD for admission to the record are the Tribune documents, not the documents produced by staff in response to Ms. Schricker's request, correct? I'm sorry.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, I have a question. If the original request was from Ms. Schricker as
Ms. Tacker.
I'm sorry, Ms. Tacker as a member of the public, then why is the CSD...
Because
attorney answering, and I'm sort of confused.
Well, Ms. Okun has accepted and deemed that request and is responding to it on a basis of accommodation.
Right.
So that the documents are produced and not withheld.
I understand that.
Based on potentially a valid objection, that it's not a proper request.
But if the person requesting is a member of the public and not a member of the CSD, why is it even before us in this hearing?
Well, that's a good question.
Because the request was taken by regional board's counsel that Ms. Tacker was acting in her capacity as a member of the CSD board member.
Well, and I'm sorry to confuse the issues by getting the two Public Records Act requests confused. Really, all that is being proffered for introduction into this hearing record are the Tribune documents. That's my understanding. And those documents are were not in the original index. So the question for the CSD is, for what purpose are those documents being offered into evidence?
You gave to the former and the latter. It's the latter, that they're for ongoing issues of compliance.
Okay.
That they show the whole process, which was put made relevant in this hearing, on what was going on in relation to the SRF loan, the funding with the state, our negotiations with the state, all of that's been a part of this record, and those show the behind the scenes of what was happening the whole time we were negotiating.
Very good. And with that as foundation, I believe it was contemplated by the chair to go ahead and admit those documents as part of the index.
Right.
We just needed to clarify the basis, and since there was no cover note explaining why what the relevance was, we wanted to clarify that. Thank you. Does the index reflect that determination, Tom?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Okay.
But I have a comment on this.
Go ahead.
The documents that we're talking about now that have been admitted from the Telegram Tribune website, submitted by the CSD, we've dealt with that now. There is an outstanding objection from the CSD regarding the Public Records Act request to the prosecution staff. It's separate from the Telegram Tribune documents. That's resolved now. There is an objection. I think it was Mr. Onstott in one of his emails that made the objection, saying you have not received all the documents that you asked for from prosecution staff.
Okay, maybe I'm... Do you have that? I don't have the Public Records Act request that you're referring to in front of me.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you have. It sounds like you anticipate resolving your, as you stated just a few minutes ago, you're going to resolve any remaining concerns about the Public Records Act response in a forum outside this one. Is that correct?
No. You're putting words in my mouth again. What I'm saying is we made requests, whether it's myself or through Director Tacker or through Julie Tacker as an individual, that issue is not relevant. The fact is that requests were made for some documents to be part of these proceedings. And I think that they are and have been. What I'm also saying is that because you can't mix whether they come into these proceedings with the legality or illegality of the denial of those requests and either the state or the regional board's desire to produce them voluntarily. Those will be dealt with in a different forum.
Okay, so all we have before us for the chair and the board to resolve today is the admission of the records that have been produced to date and that was just dealt with, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And one other thing that was in that same paragraph of the December 12th letter was a request by Mr. Onstott that for the chair to reconsider, and I quote, for the chair, that the chair reconsider its exclusion of records showing prosecutorial bias. We need to deal with that as well. Exactly what records are you referring to, Mr. Onstott?
Well, there were a number of records that the chair excluded. A couple of in particular are emails, and I think one, in fact, was put up on the overhead. The cartoon drawn by a regional board member, everybody knew he was a regional board member, distributed at CSD proceedings. As our view is that the regional board staff, including the prosecution team, is biased, and that excluding evidence allowing us to show that is an abuse of discretion. We should be allowed to produce evidence that either members of the board staff itself and or the prosecution team had a bias in moving forward towards the CSD and did not act objectively.
Ms. Johnson, I wasn't asking about the argument as to why it does or does not meet the standard for a prosecutorial bias argument. That's a legal argument that has not been briefed or had in any way. There were no citations to law. There were no citations to fact in your objection. All I am asking is specifically, what documents are you asking the chair to reconsider? I have the cartoon. Are there other specific documents that you're asking the chair to reconsider?
Yes, all the emails regarding the ACL complaint, which Mr. Briggs was either the author, the recipient, or CC'd on.
Were those produced?
Late comments or emails back and forth? Because I don't recall that there were any emails back and forth that were offered that were rejected.
Yeah, I don't recall seeing any specific emails being offered, being rejected either. I do recall the cartoon.
Okay,
so I'm
then that's fine. If they weren't rejected, there's no objection. They're in. Thanks.
Is there a number?
Well,
is there a number?
I think we need to clarify whether there were documents that were rejected or not. It's not clear to me which documents Mr. Onstott's talking about.
It is not clear to me either. Michael, do you have any idea?
I don't know. Is there? Okay. Can you say what number is it? What exhibit number?
Well, I don't have those in front of me, but those specifically that were prior to the issuance of the ACL complaint. And if my notes are wrong, that they weren't excluded, then I will withdraw my objection.
I can't say whether they're excluded or not excluded if they're not referenced to a number on this list. Okay.
Well, I remember the cartoon I excluded because it's a newspaper article, and when you say a regional board member, you don't mean one of us, but you mean an employee of the regional water board. And do you know if that was a prosecution team member who wrote the cartoon, or is this some other employee of the board?
Employee of the board. It was not a board member.
Okay. Well, okay. I had excluded that, and the newspaper articles are not coming in. I'm not going to change that ruling. But if there are emails that went back and forth, you know, where Mr. Briggs was involved in emails regarding the ACL, I think those should come in. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't. I remember seeing some in that package of 126 letters that I read. So maybe at the lunch break, if you can identify any specific documents, Mr. Onstadt, that you think you want to make sure are in, and to go to this point, you know, we can deal with that later.
Okay.
Okay.
And I would just to enable the chair to address the request for reconsidering the admission of the cartoon, I think it would be useful to have some questions directed at the prosecution team staff concerning the circumstances of the cartoon's creation. Who created it? What kind of employee were they? Are they part of this prosecution team? Did they have anything to do with the ACL? If you don't mind,
go
just
ahead.
A couple. I believe this would probably be appropriate for Mr. Briggs. Mr. Briggs, who was the artist who created that cartoon?
Scott Phillips, a member of the regional board staff and a resident of Los Osos.
And when did that happen?
I should say a former member of the regional board staff, former resident of Los Osos.
When was the cartoon created? Roughly.
I don't know the date. It might have been a year or so ago.
Okay. And does that person work for the board anymore?
No.
How long ago did this person leave the employ of the board?
Probably 6 months ago.
And did, I'm sorry, refresh my memory on the name?
Scott Phillips.
Did Mr. Phillips have anything to do with preparing the draft ACL or presenting this referral to the board for enforcement action?
No.
Has he participated in the preparation of this enforcement case in any manner?
No.
Has he made any recommendations to the board regarding enforcement in Los Osos outside the context of the ACL?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Did he identify himself as the artist, as an artist who was a regional board staff employee? Did it say Scott Phillips?
On the cartoon?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Engineer, Regional Water Quality Control Board?
Oh, no.
No?
He might have had his name on it.
Okay.
I don't recall.
All right.
Okay. That was up to you, Mr. Chairman. Whether you want to reconsider admitting that or not.
I want to keep to not having newspaper articles come in. I'm not going to change my ruling on that.
Mr. Chair, point of clarification, that cartoon, to my knowledge, is not a newspaper article.
Well, not an article, but something printed. I mean, it's an artist rendition. It's a cartoon. Okay? You're right. It's not an article in the strict sense of an article. And if the CSD wants to argue in closing that the prosecution team staff is biased, you want to refer to anything else like that, cartoons and things, that's fine. We'll go ahead and listen to that argument. All right.
Okay.
What is next, Ms.
I believe that those were all of the document objections raised. Oh, I'm sorry. There was one more objection raised, according to my notes, by the CSD that must be dealt with, and that was the blanket objection to everything submitted by the prosecution staff on December 12th. And I believe those were the documents concerning the various settlements of the various lawsuits concerning the funding of the Tri-W site and the Measure B. And the prosecution team had introduced those into the record in response to the chair's request for information on current and ongoing activities that may affect compliance. Is that objection still outstanding?
It is.
Okay. And that would be for the chair.
And is it based on the fact that it seeks documents that essentially go beyond the scope of my ruling on December 2nd?
In part, but we also object on the basis of relevance.
Okay. All right. Well, the objection is noted, and I'm going to overrule that request.
Overrule the request to admit the documents or overrule the objection?
Overrule the objection. In other words, I do feel, and of course it was my intent and desire after December 2nd that the district be given every opportunity to put into the record anything related to efforts they've made that would bring them into compliance with the board's orders, or anything on the flip side that would bring them further away from compliance. And I think that those are relevant documents to that issue.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I might, just so I can have a clear record here. First of all, I believe those settlement agreements, and I quite frankly haven't looked at all of them, I believe they are pre-December 2nd. Secondly, our basis for our relevance objection is based on, it's a clear attempt by the prosecution team to make a run at the SRF loan monies to satisfy any fines that the district may be subjected to at the end of this hearing. We believe that there is a letter. First of all, we have the questions and answers from the board. But secondly, we have we believe that to the extent that those funds are around anymore, they're subject to the litigation between the district and the State Water Quality Control Board. So why put them in if the only idea here is to say you have money to pay these guys, therefore you have money to pay us, when the fact of the matter is any money the district has outside of those budgets that Mr. Buell put up there is money that is subject to litigation between the district and the State Water Quality Control Board.
All right. Both sides are going to have their opportunity to argue anything they want from those documents. So you'll have additional time to get into that. And it is argument that you're presenting to us.
So, Mr. Chairman, is your ruling that those documents will be admitted?
Yes, okay. They are admitted.
And then the last more general comment that I have is just to make sure we don't miss any loose ends. The indices that have been prepared by Mr. Thomas, which basically collect together the index of documents submitted by the CSD and the index of documents submitted by the prosecution team, to be clear, are the record, in addition to the documents submitted at this hearing and admitted by the chair. There is nothing else except what's on the indices, as noted. And I believe we addressed all objections, and I just want to make sure there weren't any that were overlooked on relevance, on hearsay, on anything. So now's the time to make sure we hit them all.
Just for the sake of clarity, and I'm not trying to be argumentative here, the Cal Cities administrative record consisting of these three boxes right here from the prosecution team are in the administrative record.
I believe those were included in the prosecution team's index of administrative records that they were that they offered, and therefore they're there.
Yes. The answer to that question is yes.
Is that correct, Ms.
Yes.
Oken? The answer is yes.
And then, as I understand it, that the regional board could have in their files documents in addition to what's in the administrative record, and are those documents, in addition to what's in the Cal Cities record, that are in addition to the documents that the prosecution team has specially offered.
The answer is no.
Are those documents in the administrative record?
No, if they're not on the index, if they're not on either of the indexes, or they weren't otherwise admitted specifically by the chair, they're not in the record.
Thank you.
Actually, the first item of the index refers to all Central Coast Water Board files, exhibits, and agenda material pertaining to this matter, including our general files. And at the last hearing, it was ruled that those were admitted.
Yeah, and since that time, we asked that the prosecution staff provide a updated comprehensive list of all documents it wanted to have in the record, and that was intended to expand upon that. Are there documents not in your index that you had otherwise thought would be incorporated by that, just to be clear?
Probably.
Well, perhaps at the break you could check that and make sure, because we are going to try and keep this definitive given the formal nature of this hearing and not open-ended, given the many, many years of action on this action that's on this site that could be problematic in preparing the inevitable Superior Court administrative record. So if you could just narrow that down, that would be great.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
On the master document list 2, which is the list of documents from the prosecution team, items 150 through 182, the final column will have to be updated now that the chair has made his decision about whether these are accepted or not. He said they are accepted. I'll have to update that column. Just so you know, there'll be another printing of this.
There was one other document that we admitted. I know there's been some submitted, and there's been some discussion about newspaper articles, but specifically there was a newspaper article that we submitted 2 days ago as being a statement or including statements against interests that you discussed regarding the sale of Brodersen and the Tri-W site. And so I asked for a ruling on that, and also I asked for the opportunity to cross-examine the district regarding the statements, and that cross-examination might eliminate the need for the documents.
Okay. You know what I will do to be consistent? The article doesn't come in, okay? But, however, you have time anyway, and you can cross-examine their witnesses or anyone who made those statements and check into the veracity of the statements. So why don't we deal with it that way? But I want to be consistent with newspaper articles and cartoons not coming in. Okay.
Mr. Chair, then I have a question. We've identified two witnesses, Mr. Palamas and Mr. Briggs. How many do the prosecution still intend to call to present new evidence at 1 o'clock today?
Well, the only topic of our cross-examination, other than any cross-examination that results from their additional examination, would be regarding the issues, the sole issue of the sale of those two properties. And so at this point, I anticipate examining Ms. Schicker and Mr. Blesky, and depending on what their answers are, there may be additional witnesses if they say they don't know the answer, but the person sitting next to them does.
Their cross-examination is more limited than yours. Okay. I'm allowing you to go into areas that you didn't cover before with these witnesses. Their cross-examination is limited to issues that I ruled on would be opened up after December 2nd. So you've got more leeway in your cross-examination than they do. So I don't know how much time they're going to need for that, but Ms. Oken just told us kind of the substance of what that is going to be.
Okay. I understand the chair's ruling, and again, for the record, we would object on new testimony at this late date. It's not cross-examination. It's direct examination of an adverse witness. Cross-examination, by definition, is limited to the scope of the witness's testimony at the first instance, and we would ask the chair to reconsider the 90-minute time limit, since we now have at least three more witnesses the prosecution are going to call, and we should have an opportunity to ask them questions as well.
Mr. Chair, you can't have it both ways, it seems to me. You've already ruled that the district is going to be examining its witnesses on issues that it did not cover before. So if you're going to apply one standard, you should apply it uniformly.
And I think you're right. And so I will give the prosecution team that leeway with their remaining time. That'll make it more even-handed. Thank you, Dr. Press. Okay, are we through the document issue, Mr. Thomas and Ms. Schaffner?
Yes.
Okay.
I have nothing more further. Thank you.
Good. All right. Now we can get to the order of presentation. And it will be as follows, and I think we've already kind of modified this because, the first thing we're going to do is allow the district time use whatever time you wanted to examine any additional witnesses with respect to those other items that you felt were not covered before.
Yeah. Could, with the chair's indulgence and, of course, the board's too, Mr. Miller's presentation is short.
Let's
and
put him on
rather
first.
Than have him come back and...
Put him on.
Okay, thank
Go
you.
Go ahead. Put him on, and then if you want to get into Mr. Polhemus, we can deal with him.
I'm way too hungry for that. I just want to get Mr. Miller excused so that he's not coming
okay,
back. He's a busy person.
All right. Mr. Miller, would you come up here? Come up to the podium, and you are still under oath. Okay. Hang on one second. Michael, 90 minutes. Okay. 90 minutes, and the clock is ticking. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As was indicated earlier, there's some more recent information that came after the information that was submitted in my last testimony, and what that is the latest sampling event for nitrates in the groundwater basin, and that information is produced in a report by Cleith and Associates in December, and it's based on sampling that took place in October. So this data was not available at the last hearing. We thought that it would be appropriate to present at this hearing. The slide that you see before you is presents the same data as we presented before. However, there has been some increases in nitrates, some decreases, and we'll show that on the next slide. This is a slide representing the nitrate concentrations in the October sampling event, again reflected in a December report. And I will show you first in green there are two monitoring well locations that had substantive decreases in nitrate concentrations. Then in yellow, there are monitoring wells that have substantive increases in nitrate concentrations since the last sampling event. In reviewing the testimony of Mr. Thompson, he did note that nitrate concentrations do fluctuate seasonally, although there are two of these wells, specifically 7L3 near the top, again as a yellow band around it, and then 13H that had nitrate concentrations that were higher than previous seasonal amounts. So we recalculated some of the average nitrogen concentrations, nitrate concentrations basin-wide, and I've overlaid those on a slide that was presented by the prosecutorial staff at the previous hearing, and those are shown here. Again, this is the slide presented by the prosecution team. It denotes in red the drinking water standard for nitrate, and I've given you the conversion there because the district normally reports their nitrate results as nitrogen as opposed to as nitrate, so those have been converted for purposes of this slide. In blue, you'll show the average nitrate concentration from the April results, and in green, you see the average nitrate concentration from the recent October results. We are retesting one of those wells, which came up with a nitrate concentration of 52 as in, which is a very high reading, and so that's in the process of being resampled, and we'll, of course, provide that to your staff once we have those results. If you look at an extension of the time frame there on out to 2005, you can see that we believe that our opinion that those results show a more stable nitrate concentration pattern over time since the implementation of the prohibition, which is shown by the extension of that line. We do still believe that it does hold true that since the 1988 moratorium took effect, nitrate levels have been fairly stable over that period of time. But we wanted to be clear with this board that the recent sampling event was higher than the April results, and of course we'll be continuing to test those over time. We wanted to present the latest information.
Mr. Real quickly, can you flip back to the prior slide, please? Yeah, right there. You got those areas in green. Going from the lower right-hand corner, moving to your left, what does that lower area depicted in green represent?
The areas that are cross-hatched in green depict the zones of special benefit, specifically Vista de Oro and Bay Ridge Estates, and also the fire station. The lower left-hand depicts Vista de Oro. The lower right-hand depicts Bay Ridge Estates. So you can see how those service areas overlay on the nitrate concentrations.
Thank you.
I have nothing further and be happy to answer questions.
Okay. I guess, let's see, let me just stop the clock here. How do we want to proceed with this? Do you want to ask any questions of this witness? No questions.
We have no questions.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Seitz, Mr. Onstott. You can. Any other witnesses?
Thank you. Oh, I would love to break before we don't have any. No, Mr. Miller was the only witness.
Okay.
I had mine.
Okay. Well, what I was going to allow you to do was to, you know, proceed with any additional examination that you felt you didn't cover, you know, December 1st or 2nd.
I was hoping that we would get, since I didn't come prepared to do that, I was hoping we'd get the lunch break to give me a chance to review my notes so that I could conduct.
Okay. All right. I'd like to not break yet. Ms. Okun, are you prepared to proceed with any presentation of evidence post-December 2nd?
I'm ready to cross-examine the district.
On
regarding the Broderson and Tri-W issues.
That's okay.
Certainly other presentation of evidence.
Okay. All right. Why don't we... yeah, and did you want to deal with Mr. Polhemus?
No.
Or do you want to wait also until you prepared some notes?
Please.
Okay.
I just wanted to make one just quick thing. I assume that those slides that are up there are moved into the record?
Sure.
Okay.
They're in the record.
Okay. Do we have copies of them?
Can you produce copies of them?
I think you have the CD right there. Well, Rob, do you have any problems leaving it with them?
Okay, thank you. All right. Michael, 8523. Time-wise. And where are we with prosecution? Well, give them the time. Both sides got the same amount of time. 4 hours, okay. Let's do this in 60-minute increments. Okay, so I'll set this to 60. Okay, Ms. Okun, go ahead.
I'd like to call Lisa Schicker.
Okay, Ms. Schicker, you're still under oath. Please come to the podium.
Good afternoon, Ms. Schicker.
Good afternoon.
What was the date that the district purchased the Tri-W property?
I don't know.
And could you speak, Ms. Schicker, into the microphone so that everybody could hear you?
Yes.
Thank you.
I know negotiations began in September of 1999.
September of 1999?
2000, excuse me. A little bit of feedback there. September of 2000.
Do you have any idea how long the negotiations took place before the purchase was consummated?
No, I do not know.
Is there anyone who represents the district who would know that?
I think Mr. Buell would know.
Do you know what the purchase price was?
Approximately $3.3
million.
$3.3 million. Oh, just $3 million. Excuse me.
Has the district had an appraisal done of the Tri-W site since the purchase?
No.
Has the district done any investigation at all as to what the current value of the Tri-W property is?
No.
Have you talked to any brokers about the potential value?
No.
You personally or any of the district's representatives?
No, I can just speak for myself.
To your knowledge, have any district representatives discussed this issue with brokers?
No.
Has the district or any district representative
entered into any discussions with any person regarding a potential sale of the Tri-W property.
Objection vague, objects to the extent that it calls for attorney-client privilege communications or discussions held in closed session.
Have there been any discussions that were not in closed session between a district representative and any person regarding a potential sale of the Tri-W property?
Objection to the extent it would violate attorney-client privilege.
Well, the question was towards anything in open session. So that would then waive any attorney-client privilege.
Or outside the meeting at all. It doesn't. I think the objection can be sustained probably to the extent that it would call for conversation specifically with counsel, but with anyone else, the privilege would not apply.
Yeah. And Ms. Checker, any conversations you've had with your attorneys, okay, where there have not been third parties present, you know, non-party people, those conversations are protected, okay? But if there have been discussions regarding the scope of this question, and even if your lawyers were present, if there were other people present, like a real estate broker, sales agent, somebody that is not a member of the CSD, that privilege would be waived, in my opinion, and then we would be entitled to know the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ms. Okun, could you please repeat?
Has the district or any of its representatives had any discussions with any person other than your attorneys, with no one else present, regarding the potential sale of the Tri-W property?
Yes.
Who were involved in those discussions?
That would be me with the reporter from the Telegram Tribune, and also at public meetings in general discussions with the public.
What did you tell the reporter from the Tribune?
Objection calls for a narrative. And vague as to time.
Well, as to the time objection, Ms. Schicker just testified that she had a conversation with the Tribune, and whatever time that conversation occurred is the time I'm referring to. Narrative isn't a proper objection in an administrative proceeding.
Well, you can. I'm going to overrule the objection. Go ahead and you can answer the question. If it's the discussion that you've already told us about that you had with that reporter, that's fair game. So you can answer the question as to what you discussed with that reporter.
Okay, as one director with no authority.
We understand that, but you are the president of the CSD, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I know this issue has come up before, and I've been thinking about it repeatedly in the last month. Aren't you authorized to talk on behalf of the board, at least to articulate what the board's policy is with many issues?
Only if it's been adopted. I don't have any authority other than through the three things that have already been discussed. You know, I can speak to the press, I can speak to you, I can speak about what the board might or might not do, but ordinance, motion.
Okay. All right. Why don't you answer the question in terms of you as an individual board member?
Okay. Well, before you answer it as you as an individual board member, you just said that you had authority as a board member and as the president of the board to speak to the press, correct?
That's correct.
And we're talking about a conversation with the press?
Yes.
Okay.
Objection, lack of foundation. There's been no establishment of the authority of President Schicker to speak on behalf of the CSD regarding any real property issues. Until that foundation is laid, my objection will be continuing.
The objection is noted. You can go ahead and answer the question.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat, please?
What did you tell the Tribune reporter regarding the potential sale of the Tri-W property?
I spoke to the reporter about Tri-W in a general sense with many options that the CSD was considering at this time of how to deal with the current situation.
So your testimony was, or strike that, you told the reporter that the CSD was considering the sale of the Tri-W property.
I told the reporter that all options were on the table, and I made a list of options of things that we could possibly do to address water quality quickly and address our situation.
Has, without disclosing the contents of any closed session discussions. Has the district had any closed session meetings regarding sale of the Tri-W property?
Yes.
Has the district entered into any negotiations regarding the sale?
No.
Did the district ever enter into an escrow regarding the sale of the Tri-W property?
The sale of, no.
Has
how about the transfer of?
I was just thinking of the past, like in 2000 before I wasn't there, you know, when we bought it. That's why I hesitated. So.
Okay, and you can assume that all my questions have to do with events today that occurred after the September 27th election.
Okay.
So there has not been an escrow opened that would in any way involve sale or transfer of the Tri-W property since September 27th?
There has been no escrow opened.
Has the district received any offers to purchase the property?
No.
Regarding the Broderson property, what was the purchase date of that property?
Mr. Buell would know. I'm not sure.
Do you know what the purchase price was?
Approximately 4.6 million.
I'm sorry, what was that figure again?
4.65.
Thank you.
Has the is the district considering selling that property?
Objection, lack of foundation. Also objection to the extent it calls for attorney-client privilege or closed session communication. Vagueness to the term considering.
Overruled.
I'm sorry, I get this.
Is the district considering selling the Broderson property?
That was something I mentioned to the reporter as an option, yes.
So your answer is yes?
Yes.
Without disclosing the content of the discussions, has the district discussed this in closed session?
Yes.
Has the district had an appraisal done of the current value of that property?
No.
Has the district taken any steps toward investigating the current value of that property?
Yes.
What were those actions?
I think that's closed session again. I'm not allowed to discuss closed session.
Based upon that response, I will instruct the witness not to answer.
So your testimony is that the district in closed session investigated the current value of the Broderson property?
Objection mischaracterizes the testimony. Objection to the extent it calls for closed session communication, and I will instruct the witness not to answer.
Well, if that misstates your testimony, could you clarify your testimony?
I think I want you to ask the question again because I may have answered improperly.
Did the district do anything in closed session to investigate the current value of the Broderson property?
Same objection to the extent it calls for closed session communications, and I will instruct the witness not to answer.
Whenever it's appropriate, I have a question for the witness as well.
Well, I think the objection may be sustained. You can ask a different question.
Did the district or any of its representatives do anything outside of closed session to investigate the current value of the Broderson property?
No.
You said that you discussed with the Tribune the potential sale of the Tri-W and Broderson properties as one of a list of options. What are the other options on that list?
I wish I had my notes here today because there's many things we've discussed. of how to address this current situation, and I don't have them here, so it may not be a complete list if I give it to you now.
Are those notes subject to the chair's subpoena and the request to provide documents after lunch?
Ms. Okun, probably the best way would be to listen to some of the tapes of the meetings where we discuss this openly in public with everybody.
That's kind of the problem, that there are hours and hours of tapes and things of that nature,
yeah.
And we don't have the time to delve through. That's why we asked for a summary of the DVDs that you wanted to put into evidence.
Is there anything you can recall off the top of your head that the district is considering as an option?
We have many things in motion right now that are trying to address the current situation to get to water quality as quickly as possible.
And could you tell me what those are?
We're trying to resolve the issues about the contractors and the state revolving fund loan. We've agendized items to address water quality immediately that will be heard in public, both pumping the upper aquifer, adopting septic management plan, water conservation. We've gone to the county to request an RMS reading, level 3 severity for saltwater intrusion and groundwater recharge. We've asked for presentations by consultants to get a better handle on our current water quality issues. We've filed claims to recoup money from possibly illegal contracts. So many things in motion right now. 25 meetings in less than 3 months.
Has the district given any direction to any of its employees to take any actions to further investigate the sale of the Broder Center Tri-W property?
No.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Yes. Okay. Hold on one second. Go ahead, Mr. Onstop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schicker, at any time were you authorized by the CSD board to talk to the press about real estate transactions?
No.
Or the Tri-W site in particular?
No.
Ms. Okun asked you a few questions regarding, I think her words were consideration of a sale of Tri-W and Broderson. Do you recall those questions?
Yes.
And you can answer mine yes or no. Were those discussions in closed session held pursuant to agendized items for pending and actual litigation?
Yes.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question of the witness as well?
Sure.
Thank you.
You did mention the mad ones. So.
Didn't let you get quite as far this time, sorry. Could you, this is in follow-up on some of the questions that Ms. Okun asked. I was hoping for a little more specificity. What exactly is the board doing? What actions is the board currently taking to regain compliance with the time schedule order specifically?
We've been, like I said, 25 meetings in 3 months, mostly trying to deal with the leftover mess of starting construction this summer before the vote. And I would ask for the same respect from the audience that Mr. Young.
Yeah, please, no comments from the audience, no snickering, yes. Anything. Yes. I've already warned everybody once, it's unbecoming of this proceeding. Please stop it. And I'm referring to your friend that just stepped out of the door. Thank you.
I'm sorry, would you like me to restate the question?
Yes, please. Thank you, sir.
What specific steps
is the CSD taking to regain the compliance path to come back into compliance with the time schedule order and proceed to meet the schedules, to meet the milestones set out in the time schedule order?
I'm just going to raise this quick objection that the district is out of compliance. I think from your perspective, there's no way that they can regain compliance with 00131 because they would have had to have the, according to your own staff report, we've been out of compliance since 2002. I don't mind the question, what are you doing to rehabilitate the groundwater base and comply with 8313? But to me, it's just a loose question to say, what are you doing to comply with an order that we allege you've been out of compliance with since 2002. Unless there's a time machine, there's just no way you can do it.
Well, I absolutely appreciate and respect Mr. Seitz's frankness in stating that the CSD is not in compliance with the TSO, and it is impossible to go back in time to say you can meet a deadline that's not been met.
What I said is that you are alleging that we've been out of compliance since 2002.
What I am asking is, what is the CSD doing to achieve the milestones on any schedule currently?
Well, we traveled to testify in Sacramento at the State Water Board twice to please ask for an ability to revise and amend the state revolving fund loan so we could continue work on the project for the parts that did comply with the measures that were voted on by the public. We also filed a petition that has been held in abeyance that protests the time schedule order because of its shortened length. We think that the time was unreasonable, and it was thought of as unreasonable then, and we maintain that position. We think 4 years was too short to do a project. We think that's why we're in the mess we're in today. We've agendized these issues that I already discussed. I won't repeat them to board, you know, about the saltwater intrusion, the studies, the septic tank maintenance, the water conservation. All of those things have been agendized. We're appointing committees this month to develop plans of action with full public input about how to keep moving forward with a project that complies and is better and addresses all the water quality basin needs that were not addressed with the original project. And we will be discussing those in meetings. We've scheduled 3 meetings a month versus the 1 meeting a month that was held prior to our thing so that we can address issues quicker. We're going to have weekly committee meetings with members of the public. And we're trying to dialogue with all agencies and establish connections with environmental groups as well to make sure that everybody's on board this time. We're very interested in dialoguing with you and working with you on getting this project done as quickly as possible.
But Ms. Shiger, is it fair to say that really what your board intends to do in terms of compliance with the time schedule order has nothing to do with the Tri-W site? In other words, you guys have made a determination whether there's been a resolution or not to essentially jettison Tri-W, get rid of it, and to focus your efforts at some other location, even if that location is not yet identified.
Objection calls for speculation as to what the board will do in the future. You can answer if you know.
Well, sir, I would subject to you that the voters decided. The voters are the ones who decided that they didn't want a sewer plant next to their library uphill from the bay. They don't want it there. That's it. It's that simple. And the Measure B, that that initiative, which was the final last resort of the people asking for a voice, states and was voted and approved, and we must comply.
Okay, let me add, and that begs another question that I had asked Mr. McClendon before, and I realized when I listened to the tape I didn't get an answer to it, and that was, in your deliberations after the election was completed and you then had Measure B, how did you weigh and balance the effect of the regional board's time schedule order and basin plan prohibition potential violations in the equation of what you were going to do?
Objection.
Let me be a little more specific with this.
you've got a local measure that is passed, Measure B. On the other hand, you've got a state agency with an order that had already been issued to your specific agency with specific milestones in it, and an agency enforcing both federal and state water pollution laws. I want to know what went on in terms of balancing what your board decided to do. We know ultimately you issued a stop work notice. That happened October 4th, 5th, or 6th. But I want to know what consideration you gave to the regional board's order, the time schedule order.
Objection to the extent that it calls for closed session discussions or attorney-client communications. And I do believe that the question was framed, Ms. Schicker, as to you personally as opposed to the board.
So you can answer it.
Pardon me?
You can answer the question.
As far as me personally?
I mean, I think it's an important question. I think your community also deserves to know how you made the decision to follow one course of action and not another and not try to get something reconciled before going down a certain path. Clearly, the path that was chosen has resulted in all kinds of consequences to this district, whether they were foreseen or not.
I would like to answer.
Okay, go ahead. I'd like to hear the answer.
I can tell you three things. The first thing that we did was, well, first I want to clarify, we suspended work, we did not stop work.
Right.
Because we wanted to get our grasp on the situation. Second, we knew the TSO had been filed and was in abeyance, and we agreed with the TSO petition and that the time schedule was always unreasonable. Never in a million years would I have guessed, personally, as a director and being involved in this case, that both the state and regional boards would not be willing to work with the duly elected body and work towards the goals of water quality, because that's all we've been talking about, is we have saltwater intrusion, we have basin issues that are not addressed by this project, we have a potential serious pollution problem by putting a sewer plant on the Back Bay. And never in a million years would I have thought that everyone would not be willing to work with us. That may be naive. Fourth point.
Well,
we appointed a regional board negotiation team, the first meeting that we had, to get working with you in cooperation and immediately. So, yes, I do believe we were ready to hit the ground and keep going, and we thought you would be as concerned as we are about the other water quality issues and basin management issues that were not addressed by this project and that were ignored, and that you would be interested in working with us on achieving all those goals with the project now that we're finally in agreement that we need a project.
Well, you say maybe you were naive or you were making some assumptions. Clearly, Mr. Briggs had sent a series of letters to the district over, I don't know what period of time, 18 months or 2 years. And I think that they were pretty clear as to what at least Mr. Briggs's position was with respect to the time schedule order and potential violations. Did you think that because of the election and a changeover that Mr. Briggs would just forget about all that?
And there's actually cause for speculation. And I assume that the chair's use of the term you, Y-O-U, refers to her personally, not in speaking for the district?
That's correct.
Mr. Briggs and I are both state employees. I'm used to dealing with agencies in my profession. I'm used to cooperation and collaboration. And I completely expected Mr. Briggs and the Water Board staff to work with us when they actually heard about the other water quality issues that were not being addressed by this project. Absolutely, I believe that. You can call me naive if you want, but as a fellow state employee with the best interests of the state and my community at heart, as a volunteer, citizen, community person, you bet I believed that that's what would happen. In light of what we discovered with the studies, the technical studies that came after the design of a flawed project, that would be fine, just like that newspaper article over there, all other places that spilled this year. We're setting ourselves up for a problem. I'm trying my darndest to alert you to those problems at this stage before it's too late. You bet I thought that we would be negotiating right now and working towards a common goal and a better project.
Ms. Schicker, do you know how many spills occurred in the Central Coast region in the past 2 years from sewage plants?
I do not know that number.
Well, do you have any information to back up your claims to the community that this plant would have spilled and contaminated the bay? What is that based on?
It's based on every Central Coast sewer plant spilling. It's a gravity sewer, and well, this one's on the back bay.
Okay. Do you know that how close this particular one is to a surface body of water compared to other ones in the region? I mean, is this closer, farther away? Is this unusually sited? I mean, do you know?
Yes, I do know. I mean, I could get out a map and a GPS, and I could measure it for you. Yes, I know the distances. I know the plants that are on the Central Coast.
I'm getting into this with you, really, because it's a statement that I've seen repeated, and it has, you know, concerned me because I don't think it's based on accurate information, and I think it misleads your public. A well-run plant does not spill. Okay, it's the exception, not the rule. We have lots of plants in this region that never spill. And most of the spills, if they occur, are cleaned up. The distance from Tri-W to the bay is no different and even of greater distance than many other plants in this region. I think the prospect that all of a sudden this was going to be a source of continual spills into the bay, I think, is very overstated and really not based on accurate information. And I don't think it serves the public well to be repeating things like that. If you can show me evidence and facts that would support that up, I'd like to see it. But I question it, and I can tell you that our board is the one agency that's responsible for enforcing things like that. And I would think that our staff would know about that if this site was going to be a problem. And this board sits in judgment all the time for imposing fines on spills. We know what comes up. We get an enforcement report with every board meeting. I just don't think it's a fair thing to say to the public. I think it's really very misleading on that fact. But I digressed into something that was just kind of bugging me, and I apologize for that. Where are we? Ms. Oaken, are you examining witnesses?
I do have a couple follow-up questions for this witness.
Okay.
Just to clarify your testimony, you testified that you completely expected the board to work with the district. When you say you completely expected the board to work with the district, do you mean that you completely expected that the board would not assess any fines?
Well, because the petition was still in abeyance and it was still an unsettled issue, I really didn't know. I'm not a lawyer, so I assumed that that was going to carry through and that would be decided, and then we could have time to keep working, and I didn't think it was a necessity to fine. Personally, because we've expressed our complete commitment to water quality and getting a project built. We've not changed that.
Okay. And my last question is, I do want to read you the quote that the Tribune attributes to you and ask you if it's an accurate quote. And the quote is that the site is a dead issue. We're not going to build there. And that's referring to the Tri-W site. Is that what you said?
It might be paraphrased, but that's probably close.
And that's your position?
That's the voter's position.
Thank
you. The voters.
Thank you. Director Schicker?
Yes.
Can you hear okay? Oh, it says it's on. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. You just mentioned that the problem that you saw with the approved project was the use of gravity sewers. You said it's a gravity sewer right above the bay. You also said that part of what you did in terms of compliance and answer to Ms. Schaffner's question was to try to convince the state board to fund the components of the system that you wanted to proceed with.
Yes, sir.
I took that to mean you were talking about the collection system.
Yes.
Weren't you asking the state board to fund a gravity collection system?
Yes, but not at that location. We were willing to compromise, even though we agreed with the community that we would have all options on the table. We were willing, in the light of the current situation, to go with gravity and get the sewer treatment plant away from the bay.
The collection system covers the entire prohibition area, correct?
Yes, sir.
So it's a you were trying to get funding from the state board for gravity sewage collection system for the entire prohibition area?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
I'm sorry, I hate to prolong this, but one thing I want to clarify for the record, and I'm not sure if Ms. Schicker would be the one to answer that or whether council would. There have been numerous objections to questions posed to the witness based on an assertion that they were the subject of closed session proceedings. When you return with the documents that you're going to return with this afternoon, could I'm going to assume that those closed session items will be properly noticed on agendas, and you could bring those with you to show to establish the foundation for these objections, with showing those subject of this examination being properly noticed as a closed session item.
Well, what the district staff is doing now is complying with the subpoena. The subpoena did not ask for agendas.
I'm asking you for substantiation of your objection to closed session information. You are implicitly asserting that the information was the subject of closed session discussions. What I'm asking for is documentation that would be reflected in the minutes if it was done in compliance with in the agenda, if it was done in compliance with the law and noticed as a closed session item.
I'm not sure I understand the question. I think that what you want is proof that what Ms. Schicker said is true. In other words, I asked her if the discussions of Tri-W and Broderson were done via agendized items, agendized for closed session under actual or potential litigation matters. She answered yes.
That and the real estate privilege, privilege that you described for negotiations regarding real property. That would have been agendized as well, correct?
Yeah, but there were none. If you were listening to Ms. Schicker, she said, in response to my question, they were under one of two categories, anticipated litigation, actual litigation. No real estate transaction were agendized. None were discussed.
Okay, so then you withdraw any objections regarding real estate transaction discussions because there were none in closed session?
If I made those in the context, yes, because that's why I asked Ms. Schicker the clarifying question as to the agenda items that were in closed session in which it was discussed.
Okay, well, I guess what would help, it's just there were a number of objections that seemed to assume that these items were discussed in closed session, and just to keep the record nice and clear and sound, it would be good to have the agenda, related agendas that show that those were indeed closed session items so that we can say, you know, it's a valid privilege and properly not a question to be answered.
I understand. Mr. Chair, can I ask a few follow-up questions?
Sure. Are you done with
yes,
Ms. Schicker?
Thank
Mr.
You.
Briggs, you're finished?
Yes.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. Let me get your...
Start my clock again?
We have to go back and forth with this. Okay. Go ahead.
Ms. Schicker, Ms. Schaffner brought up the subject of the time schedule order, and you've reviewed that order, correct?
Yes.
And you've also reviewed the ACL complaint that's before the board today. Is that correct?
Yes, I have.
Now, you used the term WE, in response to some of Ms. Schaffner's questions, we meaning the board, and I want to be clear that you are referring to what I'll call the new board, which is the board that was elected on September 22nd, as opposed to the old board that was in power prior to September 22nd. Is that correct?
It's September 27th, but yes.
27th, I'm sorry, thank you. Now, When was the last, have you recently taken a look at the ACL complaint?
I have not reviewed it since December 1st and 2nd.
Okay. And it's your understanding that what the prosecution team is asking for or recommending are fines based on per day of alleged noncompliance. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
And that the amount is $11,190,000?
$11 million.
$11 million, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I talked too fast. In your review of the ACL complaint and the time schedule order, is it your understanding that if the board assesses that $11 million plus penalty, that those penalties were incurred during the watch of the old board as opposed to the new board?
Yes, it went back to September 2002, I recall.
Thank you. Nothing further.
Here. Yes. Questions by board?
Question.
You may go ahead, Mr. Jeffries.
Thank you. In your official capacity as chair of the board, are you not the official spokesperson for that board?
I can be a spokesperson, yes. I am usually the one that's the point of contact for the press and the public.
When you talk to the press and giving statements, do you qualify or disqualify yourself as the chair of the board when you're making those presentations?
I qualify myself with my express authorities, saying I'm the chair, but I can only speak for myself unless actions were taken properly in agendized board meetings.
Is there anyone else in your district that speaks for the board or the district itself?
All directors can. We've kind of been funneling.
No, the official spokesperson.
We don't have an officially designated person.
So you are the official as chair of the board.
Objection mischaracterizes her testimony.
I don't know that I am the officially designated by a board action point of contact. It's informal.
Thank you.
Any other, Mr. Hayashi?
I have just a simple question. The Tri-W site was purchased for $3 million, and the Bonderson site was $4.65. So the total would be $7.65 million, which is a lot of money. If you look at that, I'm not saying you're looking at it, but if you look at that as a bailout position to sell, is that property still worth that money today without a use for the property? I mean, without a sewer system, you can't develop that property. So was that purchased at a higher price based on what it would be worth in the future after the sewer plant was already there, put on the property?
Objection to the extent it calls for speculation.
That's just the point I wanted to get.
Well, she can answer the question if she has some estimate or if she's taken that into consideration.
Yes, Mr. Hayashi, I apologize. I can't answer. I really just don't know.
Okay. No. Mr. Chalfross?
Yeah. At any point prior to the election, did you contact the regional board to find out what staff's position might be if Measure B passed and if the recall was successful, whether or not the regional board would, go to enforcement or not?
Mr. Buell was more in contact with the regional board staff, and we were receiving letters, and Mr. Briggs and staff did appear at one of our meetings, too.
Did you ever contact the state board prior to the prior to the election to find out what their position would be on the SRF if Measure B passed?
Yes, sir.
And what happened at that meeting?
Numerous correspondences back and forth, both between myself and other directors and Mr. Buell as well.
Did they indicate that the SRF loan was not at risk?
I think Mr. Polhemus said something to the extent in our negotiations. He said something to the extent of, we all looked at this Measure B in the office. We all knew it was coming.
I'm talking about prior to the election.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. He'd been looking at it since we'd been up there in January 2005, or Measure B was April 2005.
And when did he say this?
He said that in October when we were...
I'm only talking about contacts you had prior to the election.
Yes, we contacted him by fax, mails, email, everything.
And did he indicate that the SRF loan would not be in jeopardy?
What Mr. Polhemus told me is that anything's amenable if both parties are willing. And he also told me that we had till December 20th to amend the project and to not lose the loan.
So you didn't have any assurances that you would keep the loan?
He pretty much said we had till December 20th and that we could amend the loan. That's what he told me on the phone several times.
Okay, and did you get any assurances from the regional board that they wouldn't take any sort of enforcement action?
I didn't personally get
okay.
any.
Okay, thanks.
And do you know if any other of your board members received any assurances from regional board staff that as a result of the election they would not take an enforcement action?
I don't know that.
Okay. Yes. All right.
Actually, I have a follow-up to one of the answers to Mr. Shellcross's question.
You have to wait so that I can... Now you can ask your question.
Thank you. You said that Darren Polhemus told you that you had until December, or the district had until December 20th to amend the loan. To amend the loan to say what?
We posed the question to Mr. Polhemus that if the election and or if an initiative would pass and the people really just wanted to move the darn plant, could we do it? And he said, yes, you could. You'd have to amend the loan. And the reason we were so concerned about them giving any money in the summer was it made a lot more difficult to do it after the money had been let. So we were begging everybody to just wait for the election to see what the people wanted.
It made it more difficult to do what? To amend the loan?
To amend the loan. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did he tell you he had authority to amend the loan to change the site of the project?
He said that it happens all the time, and of course it would be a board action. We understand that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. 4053. Do we have any other questions of this witness at this point in time, Ms. Ronstadt?
We're fine.
Okay. Ms. Hoken?
I'd like to call Bruce Buell.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can I move that we break for lunch or at least a short break?
Okay, we are past 1:30, and we do have Mr. Polhemus kind of dangling somewhere. How long would your examination be of Mr. Buell?
Well, I think only a few questions, but I thought it was only going to take a few minutes with Ms. Schicker.
Okay. All right. Should we break for lunch?
You're the boss.
I'm the boss. Okay. Okay. All right. We will break for lunch. We'll break for... Let's shoot for 2:30. Okay. And make every effort an objection. Well, wait, you guys need more time, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was hoping I'd get back to my office and get my notes.
Okay. How much time would you need?
About 45 minutes, I can probably do it.
Okay. Let's do that.
I'm not trying to be an obstructionist.
I know, and then we'll wait for you anyway. But let's shoot 45 minutes then. Ms. Oaken, 45 minutes so that Mr. Seitz can get to his office.